Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit. Bandwidth for the Tech Guy is provided by CacheFly. CacheFly.com. Hi, this is Leo Laporte, and this is my Tech Guy podcast. This show originally aired on the Premier Networks on Saturday, March 17th, St. Patrick's Day, 2018. This is episode 1471. Enjoy. The Tech Guy podcast is brought to you by Fracture. Fracture is a photo decor company that prints your photos directly onto glass, then delivers them to your door ready to display right out of the box. Visit Fracture.me and use the code TechGuy15 at checkout to get 15% off your first order. And by Rocket Mortgage from Quicken Loans. Home plays a big role in your life. That's why Quicken Loans created Rocket Mortgage. It lets you apply simply and understand the entire mortgage process fully so you can be confident you're getting the right mortgage for you. Get started at rocketmortgage.com/techguy. Hey, 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 how are you today? Leo Laporte here, the Tech Guy. And it's time to talk tech, computers, the internet, home theater, digital photography, smartphones, smartwatches, all that jazz. 88. Oh, now it's time for me to talk. I was under my desk. Excuse me. When you're a tech guy. Hello, everybody. Leo Laporte here, the tech guy. When you're a tech guy, you often go under your desk, right? Am I ringing a bell? You know, you reach under there because there's wiring and stuff. And I had a new wireless charger I needed to plug in. And that meant a trip down below. And it's funny because whenever I go underneath this desk, my engineers come running in. It's not that they think I had a heart attack or something and have fallen, but because they don't like seeing me go down there because they know, danger, Will Robinson, I might do something and break things. I didn't. Everything's fine. Charger's working. 8888-ASK, Leo's the phone number, 888-827-5536. Toll free from anywhere in the U.S. or Canada. If you want to talk high tech, if you're the type of person that spends a little bit of time clambering beneath your desk, this is the show for you. We talk about, and even if you're not, we talk about computers and the internet and home theater and digital photography and smartphones and smartwatches. 888-827-5536, that's the number. If you want to call, toll-free from the U.S. and Canada. You can also visit our website, techguylabs.com. Two new devices have entered my life this week, and I'd like to talk to you about both of them, if you do not mind. One of them is causing a bit of a conundrum for me. I have had for some time the Galaxy Note 8. I've had every Galaxy phone, every Galaxy Note ever, from the first to the 8, which I have in my hand. I even had the 7, but I had to, that was a brief bit of time when I then I had to give it back because it was exploding. Never exploded for me. That was the sad thing. So this is the Galaxy Note 8, and I just got the Galaxy S9, which is rather similar to the Galaxy Note 8. Doesn't have a stylus. It's a little bit smaller screen. Somewhat better cameras. They now have cameras on the S9. It's kind of cool. The camera has a little iris that can set the aperture, the opening, the size of the opening, depending on whether you need a lot of light or less light, low light or. And it, then with it open all the way, it's f1.5, which photographers know is what we call fast. It's very sensitive to light. In fact, I think it's the fastest, the best low-light digital camera phone out there, I think. But that's really the main, otherwise, the differences really are very, you know, the DisplayMate said that this new Galaxy S9, and I have the S9 Plus, has the best screen they've ever tested. The closest you could come to perfect, they say. You know what the biggest thing for me? They finally put the fingerprint reader in the right place. And it's taken me some time. I keep swiping the wrong part of the back of the button because all the previous fingerprint readers on Galaxy phones, once they started putting them on the back, were in the worst possible place, right to the left of the camera, which was terrible, terrible. But I'm used to it. And so every time I pick up my S9 now, isn't it funny how you get used? I thumb the flash and nothing happens. And they go, oh, wait a minute. That's right. They move the fingerprint reader. But otherwise, these are very similar smartphones. I just don't know what. I guess if you're in the market to buy one, you know, you're going to decide whether you'll spend a little more for the Note 8 because the Note 8 does have, you know, it's a little more expensive, but it does have a stylus. On the other hand, the S9 has a faster processor, has the new Snapdragon 845 processor here in the U.S. And in theory, that's a faster processor. Oh, speaking of Snapdragons, that's the other device I got. Let me go get my briefcase. I got to go under the desk again. Sorry. No, let me get my briefcase out because in it I have a new laptop from HP. This is the new HP Envy X2, which, you know what? You're not going to envy me having this. This is HP and the world's first ARM-based Windows machine. Now, it's not Windows RT. It's Windows 10S, which I immediately upgraded to Windows 10 Pro. It is a tablet style. You know, it has one of these kickstands and keyboard that folds around. A pound and a half, though. Very light. Battery life has so far been great. Now, I got it yesterday, so I can't really be sure, but once I charged it fully yesterday, which was about, I would say about 4 p.m., I haven't plugged it in since, and it currently is about, it's 43%, and I've been using it heavily. So HP's claiming 22 hours of battery life. So, and you know, normally what we do when we see that kind of battery life is we cut the estimate in half. And, you know, the 11 hours is still pretty good, and I'm for sure getting that. So I'm thinking maybe I'm going to get more like 15 or 16 hours, which is pretty amazing. It also has an LTE capability. I put in a Google Fi SIM, and it worked immediately. So I don't have to be – I can be online anywhere that I can get LTE. That's pretty cool. Beautiful screen. It's 3x2, 1920 by 1280. That's kind of a new standard that Microsoft started with their Surface. Keyboard's pretty good for one of them little, you know, cover keyboards. Kickstand works in all different angles, which is nice. Now, it's not cheap. It's $999. And the really interesting thing about this, as I said, is it's running on an ARM processor, running on a Snapdragon 835. Coincidentally, the same processor as is in this Galaxy Note 8. Samsung actually makes a little dock for the Galaxy Note 8 and the S9 that you put it into and you connect it to a big screen and then use it like a desktop computer. But that's Android. This is Windows 10 running on an ARM processor. For $999, you get the keyboard and cover and pen, which is nice. It's Windows 10S, which means out of the box it only runs apps from the Windows Store. That's Microsoft's pitch to make it more secure, more reliable. But, you know, that's something I turned off because I wanted Chrome. I wanted Google Chrome, and you can't get that in the store. There's some other programs I use that I wanted. Here's the rub. It doesn't run 64-bit programs. It only runs 32-bit programs. That's the way it works because it's ARM and emulation. It could conceivably have an emulator for 64-bit programs down the road. It only has 4 gigs of RAM. That's pretty lightweight for a Windows machine these days, but not the end of the world. Not much storage either, 128 gigs of storage, but you can put in, as I did, an SD micro SD card. I added 128 gigs, keep all my documents on there. That's worked out fine. Here's the real negative. It is slow. It's really slow. That's why you're not going to envy me for my Envy. It's a kind of a sluggish performer. And you know, I understand now why they don't want you to put the Chrome and other stuff on there, because that's really slow. That stuff runs even slower. Chrome is a pig on this thing. It runs not so badly when it comes to Edge, interestingly enough, but not good for Chrome. So envy me not, this Envy. A little pricey for what you get, and not the greatest performance ever, unfortunately. I'm gonna say it's a do not buy. There's a lot to like, and if you don't need high performance, if you just use maybe Notepad and Edge and you don't need a whole lot of performance, I like how portable it is. I love the battery life. Gotta love that. But I wanted to use Chrome with it, and Chrome is really slow. You're not going to want to use the pen drawing with it. It's kind of sluggish. You know, it doesn't keep up with the pen. I'm wondering if this Windows on ARM thing is all that great. Or maybe we just need faster ARM processors. And we're getting those, too. Maybe that's something next year will be worth doing. Taking a break. Let's come back. Let's get those phones going. Kim Schaffer, she's answering the phones like crazy, like a octopus in a one-eyed cap hanger paper room. And she's going to get those calls on right after this. Well, happy St. Patrick Stewart Day to you all. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, 8888. Ask Leo. There she is. She's not wearing green either. So
yeah,
Oh, you are. It's a dark green. It's a forest green.
Michael read my mind. That's exactly the song I wanted to hear.
Who is that? The Irish Rovers?
It's Dropkick Murphys.
Dropkick Murphys. Love them.
I love that.
Yeah. Happy St. Patty's Day,
too. Happy St. Patrick's Day.
The day. You're all in green. You got green lights behind you. You're very
festive, and then after I leave here, I get to go and pour a bunch of Guinness. So.
Oh, will it be green?
It will not be green,
good.
But there will be corned beef and cabbage.
Oh,
and
I should make some corned beef and cabbage.
It will be a disaster too. Is what it will be.
I made a couple of years ago corned beef and cabbage in my Instapot in Guinness.
Yes.
And it was quite good.
Yep, we will have the Guinness stew as well.
Guinness stew.
Yeah, beef
okay.
and Guinness stew.
That sounds good.
Yeah, no. Irish food.
Schaffer, that's an Irish name?
No. That's a German name.
Yeah.
But I work at an Irish English pub. So,
oh, what fun.
So it will be.
Oh, what
it
fun.
It will be wall to wall drunks.
Amateur hour.
It will
we
be
call
amateur
it.
Hour. Yes,
yes,
exactly. I will
we're
be the sober
day.
One in the place.
Well, any excuse to have a good time. That's
exactly.
What I
exactly.
Who should. You've been lining up calls, I see, and I'm glad they're calling because at first I saw nobody and
yeah,
I thought.
Yeah, no.
They
thankfully,
hate me.
When you gave the number, out again. They finally.
I got to give the number out more often so they know what to call. 8888 Ask Leo. And which one should I? Which one of our lucky listeners?
Jeff in Hamilton, Montana has got an old router but wants to know if he gets a new one, if it'll help his download speeds.
All right. All right. That's a good question. Thank you, Kim. Top of the morning to you. You know what? I'm going to promise I won't do my bad leprechaun accent again today. That's it. It's over. Thank you, Kim. Hello, Jeff. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. It's going great. Oh, wait a minute. I have the handset up. That means you're coming through my phone. Hold on a second. Let me see how I fix that. Oh, Lordy. I got to put him on hold. We'll do that. And then I'll pick up again. Now I can hear you. I am well. How are you, Jeff? Yeah, thank you. Sorry, I did something funny with my phone.
Well, you're the tech guy. So.
I know. People think, oh, you're the tech guy. Nothing should go wrong. And that's quite the opposite. The more tech you use, the more things go wrong, right?
Hey, technology's great when it works.
Yeah, which is rare. What can I do for you, Jeff?
Yeah, I've got an older router. And we live in town, and I've got Spectrum Internet, which delivers about 60 megs, you know, usually on the download speed.
Nice, yeah.
But I know, like, during the evening, it kind of slows down and stuff. And I was wondering if a different router might help out with something like that.
So you're on cable internet, and a lot of people on cable internet will notice this slowdown. You know what's happening is Netflix.
Everybody's getting on.
Everybody's getting on Netflix. And so one of the problems with the way cable internet works, All internet is shared at some point, right? I mean, you know, you don't have exclusive access to the internet. You're sharing it with other customers of the company you're using.
Correct.
In the case of a cable company, they generally put a box in your neighborhood somewhere, and that has the what they call the feed from the internet, the downlink, and then that spreads it out to you. So you're sharing that box. So essentially, your internet bandwidth is shared with your neighborhood, your neighbors. Okay. If you have DSL or another service that goes to a central office, it's shared at that point. And usually, the backhaul there has a lot more bandwidth than the backhaul to that box in your neighborhood. But that's completely implementation specific. So Spectrum in your neighborhood could have built it maybe when there weren't as many houses there, and then more houses came along or more subscribers, and maybe they didn't upgrade the internet. So generally, if it slows down in the evening, that's not your router. The cable company slowing down. One way to test that would be to connect directly to the cable modem. You can only do that with one computer at a time, right? So you unplug you have something that's turning it into Wi-Fi, right? Did that come from Spectrum, or are you using your own?
I've got my own router, okay. But we have we have Spectrum internet, but
that's a cable modem. You have to have that. That turns the form of data coming through the coax on the cable into stuff that into Ethernet, something your router can use. But you can unplug the router, plug a computer with an Ethernet cable into it, and then do a speed test. That means you're testing the speed directly from the cable company as opposed to your router. And if it's still slowing down at night, like do a speed test in the morning and then at night, then it's definitely the cable company. The reason that a Wi-Fi router might slow down, it's kind of the similar reason, is all your neighbors have Wi-Fi. And if their Wi-Fi is getting busy at night, that might be impacting your Wi-Fi. And that's something you can do something about. That's Wi-Fi congestion. It's very common these days. Everybody has Wi-Fi all of a sudden, right? So, and the way Wi-Fi works, and I only recently learned this, is kind of the way Ethernet works. It's what we call a collision detection network. When there's other people's Wi-Fi that your Wi-Fi router sees and there's activity going on, your Wi-Fi router go, oh, I'm going to hold on a second. Whoa, hold on. I'm going to stop transmitting, then I'll come back later. That can slow things down as well. But I'm almost certain it's Time Warner, not your router.
Okay. Well, I appreciate the answer to that question. Yeah. Then I was thinking about maybe getting a new router.
Well, hold on. I can talk to you about that too, but we got to take a break. Time for the bottom of the hour. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. So, you know, how old is your router?
Oh, it's probably about 5 years old.
Yeah. So I also, my recommendations on that have changed recently. I've also come to the opinion that routers wear out. Or 5 years technology changes too. So yeah. I do believe that it's probably a good idea to get a new router every few years. So you are due for a new router. And you'll get better, definitely get better speed from your router. If you get a newer router. And so that might be enough to overcome what's happening, right? Because it might be a combination of both the neighbors getting on and your router not really keeping up.
Yeah, okay. So, well, that sounds good. So yeah. I might look into that.
How big is your house?
Oh, it's small. It's a little, three-bedroom, two-and-a-half bath, or one-and-a-half bath. It's not very big.
About 2,000 square feet?
Probably about 1,500.
Okay, perfect. That's perfect. Then a single good router like an ASUS AC3200 would do the job for the whole house.
Okay.
So look at the ASUS routers. I'm fond of those. They're very upgradable. They keep their software up to date. They do a lot of smart bandwidth shaping. But expect a little sticker shock because routers are more expensive than they were 5 years ago. You're going to be spending.
Yeah, I've kind of looked into them a little bit and checked around. But you said that the Jesus, is that what it was?
Yeah, sounds like Jesus, doesn't it? ASUS, Asus.
Oh, ASUS.
Yes, sir.
Okay. All right. I will look into that and check on that.
That'll help no matter what, because it's got the AC, the new 802.11 AC. It's got bandwidth shaping. It's got beam forming. It's got new features that make it, a better router. Plus, it's tri-band, which will help with neighbor congestion.
Okay. Well, I appreciate all the information and the help.
All right.
And I will definitely check into that.
Take care. Thanks for the call. Yeah, that's so there's a couple of recommendations at work there. But it is a good idea to get a new router no matter what. Jesus router would be good. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, on the line with us, the home theater guy, Scott Wilkinson, editor at avsforum.com, our personal home theater geek. Hello, Scott Wilkinson.
Hey, Leo. Happy St. Pat's Day.
Happy St. Patrick's Day to you. I'm glad to see you wore green, even though I forgot. It's okay. You can pinch me. If you can catch me.
Through Skype, yes.
So we went, Lisa and I went to see Black Panther this week.
Ooh, what'd you think?
Well, first of all, great movie. I'm not a comic book movie fan, you know, Marvel or DC. I generally don't like those movies because they're just big action flicks and, you know, and I think that.
I get you.
They're comic books. But this one I really liked. I thought this had a really great message. It was very powerful. And we saw in a Dolby Atmos theater. And I'm going to give you the direct quote as I'm leaving the theater after seeing, you know, all the bits at the end, because you have to stay for the credits.
You have to stay till the end, yes.
Darn comic book movies. I'm looking over to Lisa and I'm saying, Lisa, Scott was right. Scott was right. I have never heard better movie theater sound. It was phenomenal.
Yep.
They had, you know, this is our little Petaluma theater, but they've obviously upgraded it. The subwoofers were great. Really good bass, but I noticed that they had 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 very nice speakers going all the way back. And obviously, because it's Atmos.
On the walls, you mean.
On the walls. And then obviously, because it's Atmos, I couldn't see them, but they must have had speakers above, right?
Absolutely, yeah. And they probably had speakers on the back wall as well.
I suspect they did, because the sound stage was completely surrounding.
Immersive.
It was everywhere.
Yeah.
And you couldn't, you know, it was wonderful. It really worked quite well.
Yeah, so, they did a great job on that movie. I mean, when those ships fly overhead and stuff like that, it's really, really nice.
It was a good movie for that, and the soundtrack is wonderful, and I really so now I want to get Atmos at home.
Ah, yes.
So I'm looking at, because I think you mentioned these, ELAC, ELAC speakers. That's your
ELAC speakers.
That's you're a fan of Andrew Jones, sound designer, right?
Seriously. Speaker designer extraordinaire.
And he does these ELACs. They just put out a new debut 2.0 series, which is you know, relatively affordable. For a 5.1 system, I think it's about $2,000, which I think is pretty good considering you're getting 6 speakers.
Yep, really good.
And they have an Atmos speaker, which fires up. It's an upward firing, like a little wedge.
Yep. Exactly. And this is the solution to people who say, well, I'd love to have Atmos, but I really don't want to mount speakers on my ceiling.
Yeah.
You know, either the spouse objects or it's just not practical.
Putting wires up there.
And more wires.
I had already hired somebody to crawl under my house and put wires for the surround. So I don't want to get him up in the attic now putting
in
wires.
In the attic, right, exactly. Yeah. So Dolby came up with this, what I think is a brilliant alternative.
Do they work?
Which is, they do, depending on the ceiling. Now, I don't remember the ceiling in that room that you have your OLED in.
It has to be fairly close, I'm thinking, right?
No, it has to be fairly flat.
Yeah, well, it's flat, yeah.
Okay, so, but
well, wait a minute, aren't all ceilings flat?
No, you've got pitched ceilings, I think in your living room, it's not flat.
No.
It's a big, tall ceiling, and it goes up at an angle.
It's also 20 feet up.
And well, that's angled. A little too.
So I couldn't do it in the living room, but I can do it in my den. It's a flat ceiling, and it's a normal height ceiling.
It's like 9 feet tall, something like that. Yeah. That's perfect. As long as you don't have like acoustic tiles up there.
No. It's a regular.
If it's just a regular flat drywall ceiling.
Yep.
Sure. Then what you do is you put these what are called Dolby Atmos modules. These little wedge-shaped speakers. You put them, sit them straight on top of your front left and right.
Yeah.
And ideally your surround left and right. And
I need 4 of them.
You don't need 4. No, you can get away with 2.
Okay.
You can get away with 2. I prefer 4, but that's just my preference.
All right. I'll keep that in mind.
Yeah, you put 2 on your front left and right speakers.
All right.
And they fire upward at a slight angle. And that's kind of important because the sound goes up to the ceiling at a slight angle and then comes down angle of incidence equals angle of reflection.
So these speakers are a wedge. So you put the thin edge of the wedge towards you. So it bounces off the ceiling into your
ears.
And
then back towards you. Yeah, exactly. Got it.
And how would you do that with the surrounds? I guess you'd have them pointing in.
Well, you'd do the same thing. The thin end of those wedges would be pointing toward you.
Toward me. So you may be having... Yeah. Because my surrounds are kind of... They're not quite behind me. They're roughly at my ear distance.
Yeah, that's fine. That's fine. Yeah. So the thin end of those wedges points towards you.
Towards your ears.
Towards your ears, exactly. Okay. And the sound goes up and then bounces back down and hits you right between the ears.
There's one more thing you need, I guess, which would be an Atmos-capable receiver.
Correct.
Right?
Correct.
We've got to distribute the sound properly.
It needs to be decoded.
Yeah.
Okay. So Dolby Atmos is encoded, and the bit stream comes off of the disc. Or Netflix, for example, does Atmos as well, streaming.
Really? But oh, that's good news.
It does,
The majority of the things I look at are streamed, not on Blu-ray.
Exactly. Well, Netflix, I can't recall others that do, but as it happens, I just visited Netflix last Thursday, and they were telling us about how they, in fact, are now streaming Atmos.
Nice.
And
that's
they've
great.
They've got a bunch of titles that do that. Anyway, it's a bit stream. It's an encoded bit stream. Yeah. It hits your receiver. The receiver needs to be able to decode it and send the right sounds to the appropriate speakers.
Now, I have to check to see if my Denon, I have a fairly late model Denon, will
then
do
it probably
that.
Does.
Yeah, I bet it does. But otherwise, do you have one you recommend?
Well, Denons are among my favorites.
Yep.
Virtually all receivers these days do it. I just posted a thing on AVS about a 2018 Onkyo entry-level receiver, $400.
Oh, nice.
That does it. That does Dolby
Atmos. I'm an Onkyo fan as well. They're, ironically, I think it's all the same company. But is it? I don't remember. But I think
it's not quite.
Denon and Marantz was purchased by
Denon and Marantz are the same company.
Mm-hmm. And then Onkyo, or maybe Onkyo's its own thing still. Okay.
Onkyo still is its own thing. And Integra is sort of the high-end branch of Onkyo.
Now, if I put those Atmos speakers on top, the Elacs have tower left and right. Can I put them on top of the tower?
Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
Oh, okay. So
that's the
sensible,
place to do it.
That's a sensible way to do it.
Absolutely.
Okay.
That's the best way to do it.
Oh, well, this is good.
Yeah.
So now
I
have to decide if I should upgrade a perfectly good 5.1 surround system to get the Atmos sound.
Now, I forget what kind of speakers you have right now.
I have Epiphones in one room, and I can't remember which I have in my office. And then I have, they're both American made. I can't remember the other.
Are they Aperion? I can't remember.
Yeah,
now.
They might be. Yeah. I like the Aperions. Anyway, they're American. They're good speakers. Yeah, they're fine.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. No
Will
question
the
Elacs
sound better, do you think?
I don't know about better. They certainly will sound good. It's hard to say.
I mean, I might check to see if the speakers I have offer
Atmos. You can also just buy the modules and put them on top of your existing speaker.
But don't – now, I know this is kind of what you've told me before, is that for the center channel and for the surrounds, you kind of want to match them.
That's correct. That's correct.
Is that true for the Atmos as well?
I think it's less important.
Okay, because they're just giving you a little ambient stuff going on.
Well, yeah, exactly. And you're getting distorted by reflections and stuff like that. So
okay,
it's less important. I think the subwoofer is the least important thing to match. You can mix and match that easily.
Yes, I often do that. I have, because it's just boom, boom. As long as it moves the floor, I'm happy. You'll find Scott's work at avsforum.com, including what he was just talking about with the Atmos and so forth and Netflix. avsforum.com and each week right here. Thank you, Scott.
You bet.
Hey, if I'm going to put Scott on screen, Burke or somebody, I need to get you to put Scott in number 5. We got the wrong Skype in number 5. I don't have that capability because I never installed the software on my computer. But will Atmos work with a 7-foot popcorn ceiling?
Popcorn ceiling is
that's an acoustic treatment, right?
Well, no, it's not an acoustic treatment. Oh. It's a style thing.
Oh.
It's a decorative element from the 70s, I think.
Oh, there he is. Okay.
It won't work as well. A popcorn ceiling will certainly do something called diffuse the high frequencies. So it won't sound as crisp.
Okay.
I really think a flat non-popcorn ceiling is going to be the way to go.
Mm.
Beatmaster is saying maybe a preamp instead. Certainly there are preamps that decode Atmos. Either a preamp or an AVR that decodes Atmos is all you need. And you can get that now down to pretty low cost. Razarius is asking, does 7.2 work or do you need a 9.2 AVR? It depends. A 7.2, as long as it decodes Atmos, will give you a 5.1 with two channels of Atmos. And that is specified. There's a nomenclature for that called 5.1.2, or in the case of two subwoofers, 5.2.2. A 9-channel AVR would give you 5.2.4 or 7.2.2. So you're limited by the number of amplifier channels in the receiver. The more you have, the better it is, but then the more expensive it is too. Denon just introduced the world's first 13.2 channel AVR called the X8500. They showed that for the first time at CES in January. And that will do, let's see, with 13 channels, you can do 7.1.6. It's the first receiver that actually gives you six overhead channels. And that's kind of new and cool and exciting. As I told Leo, two channels overhead is certainly sufficient. You will get the overhead effects. If you had four, the reason I like four channels overhead, and I didn't get the chance to say this on the show, but four channels overhead gives the system the ability to fly things from front to back or left to right. More front to back is the more important part. And you can hear that. You can't hear that with just two channels. It won't sound like, oh, the plane started over here in front of me and now it's behind me overhead. Won't do that. That you need four channels for. And that's why I like four channels overhead. But it's not necessary. Two channels will work fine and it'll give you a much greater sense of immersion than you would with just 5.1 around you in that direction. Yes, Beatmaster, the AVR X8500H. That looks really nice. Oh, Razaria saw Tomb Raider 2D yesterday in IMAX. Best Tomb Raider origin story yet. I'm probably going on Monday. I did not give it the priority of, oh, I've got to go see it on opening day. My friend Tom Norton's in town. He writes for Sound and Vision magazine and the website and has for many, many years. And he came in town. LG had a cool event on Thursday that he and I were both at, which you should read about on AVS Forum. I wrote it up there yesterday.
Can you stick around for the proverbial top of the hour?
Top of the hour
to you.
Top of the hour to you.
Thank you, Scott. Take care. When you have a song with lyrics like this, do they write it out? Like, is there a sheet where it just goes do 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 do, like on a piece of paper? Leo Laporte, these things I wonder. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, 8888 Ask Leo, the phone number. We go to line two, Neil in Phoenix, Arizona. Hi, Neil.
Hey, Leo. How are you?
I'm well. How are you?
Take my call.
Well, my
I'm
pleasure.
Great.
Yeah, thanks you for calling, because it'd be boring if we're just me the whole time.
Okay, well, I'm here to help you out. Thanks for taking the call.
Thank you.
I have a question. It's kind of related to the last caller, but not exactly.
Okay.
I have Cox cable here, and I have the top-of-the-line Cox here is 300 megabits down.
That's nice. That's a lot of bandwidth. Yeah.
Well, they talked me into it. You know, they gave me the 2-year upgrade on that for the same price. I said, okay, fine.
Uh-huh.
So I have that, and I have my AC3200 ASUS receiver at your recommendation and so forth. So that's all working fine. But here's the issue. I thought a year or so ago, I'm going to go with cord cutting. So I had I have Amazon, and I have Netflix and HBO Now and the like.
Yeah.
But And those are fine, I should say. But then I said, all right, I'm going to try like Hulu Live or Sling TV. And I found the buffering on those to be just intolerable. I mean, you couldn't watch any live television at all with that, even though Netflix and Amazon and the like worked perfectly.
Well, isn't that interesting?
Even your own show. I mean, I was trying to, I like to watch your show rather than listen to it, but I can't do it this morning because, and this may have nothing to do with the state. It's similar, it sounds like, but it would buffer. It would start going for a while and then it would just quit.
So buffering, of course, means that you can't keep up with the stream. When you watch Netflix, Netflix is automatically adjusting the stream to your bandwidth, but you're getting high def, do you think? I mean, is it pretty crisp when you watch Netflix?
Definitely.
Because it'll downgrade to meet your capabilities. And here's the problem is that cable companies often do this. They say 300 megabits, and then when you test it, it's like 20, and you say, well, wait a minute, you sold me 300 megabits. They said, well, look at the fine print. It's up to 300 megabits. You're getting up to three. So I would first just see if you're getting the bandwidth you expect to get, remembering that Wi-Fi will slow you down by about 30% or 40% from your nominal speed. So the only way to get to your nominal speed is to plug into the cable modem directly, as I told the last caller, and you can test it that way. I like to go to dslreports.com and use their speed test. I find that to be very accurate, but the best way is, of course, to go to several different ones, speedtest.net, DSL Reports speed test, get a couple of a second opinion, you know, and see. And make sure you're getting the bandwidth you want. Now, if you're anywhere close, if you're even 50 megabits, you should have enough to watch without buffering anything, including Hulu and Sling TV. So I'm not sure why they would be buffering and the others wouldn't, except that the others may be adjusting to a lower speed. Right. So first make sure that you're getting the speed you expect. I'm sure you are. So, but now I have to think about, well, what's going on? Why are Hulu and Sling... And the Twit podcast stream apparently as well.
Well, actually, the live stream, well, the Twit stream actually works. The podcast, if I watch the show after the fact,
that's fine.
It works just fine, actually.
Okay.
But when I watch live, like right now, it just starts to play and then it just stops and it will not pick up again. Is not. So I don't know if that's a Ustream thing or not.
Yeah, it might be us. It might be Ustream. I mean, that if you were getting that behavior over a period of a few days, then I would say, okay, there's something else going on. Our player. When you download the video, it's 720p, and the player, you know, you download whatever quality you want. If you download the high def version, that's 720p, but that's not streaming. You're watching it directly from your hard drive, so that's not quite the same thing. I guess
this is a Roku I'm using for that. So
okay, well, you know, if you go to the Roku and you look at it on YouTube, yeah, that's streaming.
Well, you might like to know.
Yeah, well, and by the way, one way to try us on the Roku is to use the YouTube app and go to YouTube, go to our Twitch channel. We have a live stream from YouTube there as well, and that's another way to look. We are streamed on Ustream, YouTube, Twitch, probably some other places I've forgotten. So you can always check on another stream to see if we have the same problem. YouTube.com/Twit is our podcast stream, and that includes this show because we stream everything we're doing as we do it. Boy, why would Sling and why would they be different? I can't. They're not showing higher quality content than Netflix. In fact, Netflix of the four of them you described is the highest quality. That could be as high as 1080p HDR, actually 4K HDR. And if you can watch every Netflix stream and you don't get any buffering at all, well, obviously you have plenty of bandwidth. It's all on the same Roku?
Yes, it is. I'll use the same Roku for everything. I tried Sling TV first, watched that for a while, and got fed up with the buffering, so I got rid of them. Yeah. And then I tried Hulu Live, and it seemed to work for a little while. And then it would just stop. It would
now
just
remember on, trying to watch it. On the Roku, every company has its own app that they write. And they put on the Roku. So the only thing I can think of is there's something going on in those apps. They're maybe not responding properly to the stream problems or something. Try YouTube. YouTube has its own TV that's comparable to Sling TV and PlayStation View, which is another one, AT&T's DirecTV Now. It's the same idea. You get local stations plus some cable stations. They just raised the price, I'm sorry to say, to $40 because it was a really good deal at $35 a month. But you can try it for a week free or maybe even a month free. It has a Roku app and see if it has the same buffering problem. You're welcome. You can also go into, and PlayStation View would be another one to try. You can also go into your Roku settings and see what your stream quality is. It'd be almost certain, in my opinion, it's the apps that whoever, you know, wrote the Hulu app didn't correctly program the response to changes in bandwidth, maybe, or maybe it's just buffering unnecessarily. So I'm going to guess it's the different app. That would be not for sure, but that would be my guess anyway. Anybody has any idea? This is a good time for me to plug our website, techguylabs.com, because you can go there. You can see the answer, the question after the fact, and you can see audio and video. But you can also comment. And if you have a suggestion that you think might help, let's hear it. I'd like to hear it. Techguylabs.com. Line 4 is Jane in Oceanside. Hi, Jane.
Oh, hi.
Hi, Jane. What can I do for you?
Yes, boy, I'm really high tech here. I'll tell you what I have. I have a landline and a laptop.
Okay.
No TV, no cell phone, anything like that. But I've had DSL Extreme, which I really like that company. And so I was getting the service through my phone, my landline phone.
Yeah, well, that's a DSL product, right?
Yeah, and they're not doing that anymore. They cut it off.
Oh, no.
I have no
You know why? That's probably not them. It's probably your phone company because they have to.
AT&T.
Yeah, you have to ride on. They serve at the pleasure of AT&T.
Oh.
And AT&T hates it that they have to do this. I'm wondering why that happened. That's very interesting. Hang on for a second. I have to take a break for news at the top of the hour. But let's take a look at some options for you. Ways to get internet access. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Wow, that's a bummer. Did DSL Extreme say why? They're a sponsor. I should mention they're a sponsor on KFI.
Well, they said they have a better service now. What they want to do is come in and put in fiber optics. Well, I don't understand exactly what that is. I told them I don't want wireless, Wi-Fi or whatever.
Right.
And I'm wondering what other options are there except maybe if I can find a dial-up. So, I mean, I don't want dial-up because
The FCC requires something of phone companies they don't require of cable companies. The phone companies are required to let other companies offer internet access over their copper lines.
Mm-hmm.
So that's how DSL and Stream got there. But there are other companies also. So you can see who else offers DSL service through your phone lines. And if you've been happy with that.
Oh, very.
Yeah, then that's probably the least expensive way to go.
But I can't find any. I'll tell you, Earthlink doesn't offer it. They said they have to come in and put in fiber optic.
Oh, I wonder if AT&T is up to something. Have you called AT&T? Because they offer DSL as well.
No, they haven't for a long time.
Oh, there's something going on with your particular neighborhood.
Well, there's microwave towers going up everywhere. I know that.
They must have discontinued copper line services. You're still getting phone service.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. Definitely.
There's something going on that I'm not familiar with. And, you know, if you got a friendly DSL Extreme representative on the line, they might know. They might say, well, I'm not supposed to tell you this, but just between you and me, AT&T's cutting the copper or something like that.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
It's interesting. If AT&T's not offering DSL either,
no,
there is something going on in your neighborhood. So,
can I ask you one quick? Okay,
I bet you have UVerse in your neighborhood. Do you have fiber in your neighborhood?
We do have UVerse because they keep trying to push that.
What's happened. So AT&T has decided to eliminate copper in your neighborhood and start using fiber.
Mm-hmm.
Fiber is glass. It works better than copper. It's the same idea, though. It's almost certainly now how you're getting your phone service, if not now, soon. And so that's why they're pushing UVerse on you. Now, you don't necessarily want the UVerse TV service, but they also have UVerse internet service.
But is that the same as wireless?
It is not.
Oh,
it is the same as DSL, except it's over glass instead of copper.
Okay, that was really my question, because I kept thinking that if you're not getting the DSL through the copper, that if you get the fiber optics, because they're saying that then you have wireless. They're saying if we come in and put in this fiber
optics, that's the problem. It's not required of fiber. But they've decided to do that.
So if I have fiber optic put in here...
You could have just a router like you do now that's connected to that that would give you one Ethernet cable, and then you wouldn't have wireless.
Okay.
There's another thing you could do, which is let them put in the wireless, but make sure there's an Ethernet plug on the router that they give you, and then you can go into their wireless adapter and turn off the wireless and say, I don't want wireless. I presume you don't want it for security reasons?
Well, that's one reason, but mainly I have somebody here that doesn't want to be exposed. Is that through microwaves or being exposed to microwaves?
Yeah, but it's very weak microwaves. It's not. So this is a common, in my opinion, misconception. There's no scientific evidence to support this, but I understand people don't like the idea of radio waves going through them. Of course, they're going through you all the time.
Right? I know.
So the thing to understand about the way a Wi-Fi router works is it's very, very weak. And there's never been any evidence that the very, very weak, it is microwave, but that the very, very weak microwave, it needs a certain amount of energy to disturb your cells. There's not enough energy, even if you're sitting on it, to disturb your cells. So it's safe. But I understand if you have a tenant or a family member who says, I won't have Wi-Fi, it's inconvenient for you, but you can get, all of these guys are going to, because everybody wants Wi-Fi, give you a router with Wi-Fi. But you can say, but disable the Wi-Fi. I don't want it.
Will they disable or do I?
They can, and they should. If they don't, you can.
Okay. And then so as long as there's an alternate way using, you said Ethernet?
Yeah, that's what you're using now. If you don't have Wi-Fi, you're plugging a cable into it, right?
Well, let's see. Yeah, I guess so.
You have to.
Yeah.
That's the only two choices, wired or wireless.
Right.
So that means you can only use one device, you know. I mean, it's kind of limiting.
It is, in a way, yeah, because you have to sit right there at the
You have to be at that box.
Exactly.
If you ever wanted to use Wi-Fi on your cell phone or a laptop somewhere else in the house, you couldn't.
Right, and we don't have cell phones either. So.
Yeah. Well, if they're worried about that, I don't want to, you know, I respect their right not to do that. That's how you would solve that. But it sounds like every service that offers you fiber, and that's all you can get now, because and that's good, by the way. You'll get very fast connections.
Oh, that's good then.
Yeah. But you'll have to disable the Wi-Fi or ask. And you know what you could say when you make the order? I only will do this if you will disable the Wi-Fi.
Okay. Because, you know, when you talk to some of these sales reps, they don't seem to really understand. I'm saying, well,
I know. They don't, because they want everybody to be the same. It's cookie cutter.
Yeah, and I couldn't get that there was a distinction between the Ethernet and the Wi-Fi.
Yeah.
You could really choose either one.
You can, wired or Wi-Fi. And their box will do wired, but it also does Wi-Fi. At least, you can always unscrew the antennas.
And I hate having people come in too, but I guess is that a big deal than coming and putting in the fiber optics?
No, it's already in probably.
Oh, no, actually it isn't here in this particular building.
They're going to do it eventually because they don't want a copper anymore. In fact, that's why DSL Extreme had to discontinue a service. They've probably cut the copper to the building.
Okay, because I really like that company. I'll tell you that
them and see what they'll do.
Okay, I did. And can I ask you, you saw Breaking Bad.
Yeah.
For that guy that couldn't stand being around Wi-Fi. Well,
yeah.
We're not that bad.
No, I understand. I have friends like that, but just there's no scientific evidence in that regard. Scott, sorry to have done that to you, but
it's
fine. Have a little time left.
No
couple
problem.
Minutes anyway.
And, couple minutes.
Yeah, take it away.
Thanks. So I've been talking with Marsworm about his subwoofer. Which used to turn on automatically when he started playing something, and now it doesn't. And he wondered if it was the Onkyo receiver, which it isn't. Virtually all subwoofers have a function called auto turn on or auto power or something like that. And what it does is it saves power, so it puts the subwoofer in standby mode until it receives a signal. When it receives a signal, it goes, oh, time to start playing something, so it powers on. This is what has stopped working. And it's a Pioneer SW8 Mark II, which is one of Andrew Jones' last projects before he left Pioneer and went over to ELAC. And so it's a fault that has developed in the subwoofer, I'm pretty sure. Marsworm, you're going to need to call Pioneer. Probably not under warranty anymore. I don't know when you bought it. I don't think they've really updated their products much since Andrew Jones left, a little bit. But anyway, I think that's what the deal is. Twisted Mister says that according to the manual, there's no sensitivity adjustment for power on. It's also rated down to 38 hertz, and they don't rate the tolerance, blah, blah, blah. Yes, get a better sub. I would agree with that. The SW8 Mark II just doesn't go very deep. It's an 8-inch subwoofer. It's an 8-inch driver. The thing that vibrates is 8 inches, and it's not enough to really go down deep. UJ, I don't think the cable is the problem. I really don't. Because he can turn it on manually, and it can work. It works fine if he turns it on manually, and then he gets a signal. So the cable is delivering the signal. It's not the cable. And I think that's about all the time I have. Thanks, everybody.
Well, hey, how are you today? Leo Laporte here, the tech guy. Time to talk computers, the internet, home theater, digital photography, smartphones, smart watches, and all that jazz. 888-ASK-LEO, that's the phone number, 888-827-5536. That's toll-free from anywhere in the U.S. and Canada. You can still call me, though, anytime from outside that area. Just use Skype out or something like that. Anything will let you call a real phone number, and it won't cost you anything because it's a toll-free number here in the States. 888-827-5536. I talked a little more with our caller at the end of the hour, and I wanted to kind of fill you in on that. She, I think I figured out what happened. She was kind of distraught. She had DSL Extreme, which, by the way, is longtime sponsor, was a longtime sponsor on our radio show in Los Angeles. Good company. I like them. But they had discontinued service to her. And I said, oh, well, are there other DSL companies? And she said, no, they've all done that. And I said, well, what about AT&T, your phone company? She said, no, they don't offer it either. And then I realized what had happened. AT&T has replaced the copper in that neighborhood with fiber, which is really probably superior to copper. It carries, you know, copper was designed for voice, not for data. They were able to figure out a way to put data over it some years ago. That's what DSL is, digital subscriber line. And phone company acronyms are awful. you explain what it stands for and it tells you nothing still. the real goal, by the way, for them when the phone company, when Ma Bell designed DSL many years ago, they wanted to put movies. They were trying to compete with the cable companies. They wanted to put movies over your phone line. And so they created a way to push a movie down a phone line. Turned out nobody wanted that. But then the internet came along and they said, oh, we can give people internet access this way. It's limited. It's limited for a couple of reasons. First of all, there's only a certain amount of bandwidth you could push down those two little copper lines. So you can't get, DSL does not get super fast, even though they've improved the technology in a variety of ways. And there's other problem is distance. Typically DSL will only work about no more than, let's say, 2 miles from the phone company. So the central office has the data switch in there, and it's pushing it down the line. But after a mile or two, it starts to, you know, get slow down. It's terrible. So it's kind of a limited service. And most people have switched to cable because cable doesn't have that problem. It's a much fatter. It's still a copper pipe, but it's a much fatter copper pipe. And the phone companies for a while were responding by putting in fiber. Verizon was, AT&T was with its U-verse. That's a glass technology. Doesn't occupy any more space than those little copper lines, but it can hold a whole heck of a lot more data. In fact, a single copper strand, which is about roughly about your size of your hair, thinness of your hair, could a single one could carry all the phone traffic on Mother's Day on one single line in the United States. It's a huge amount of data. Glass is very efficient, and it's fully digital and all of that. So I guess in her neighborhood, phone companies come in and done something which I don't like, but they call cut the copper. They put in glass lines and they've cut the copper. Now, there may still be copper. In fact, I'm sure there's still copper in your house. They didn't come in and rewire your house, but going right up to your house is probably glass, or at least down the street is glass. Usually underground. You don't really want to put glass on telephone poles. So that's why the DSL companies have said, well, we can't really offer copper service anymore. You don't have it. It's cut. And that's why I don't like it, because I think the phone companies cut it because they're required by the FCC to offer competing services over those copper wires. They don't like that one bit. So they've taken this opportunity to cut the copper and say, oh, sorry, you got to get your internet from us. Oh, sorry. Oh, dear. So you really now have only a couple of choices in a situation like that. You can get internet service from the phone company, AT&T in this case, or from the cable company. You've lost a lot of competing services. Now, it does sound like some DSL Extreme says you could get fiber. It sounds like they're maybe still getting permission to run over AT&T's fiber lines, which would be good news. She didn't want Wi-Fi in the house, though. She has a family member who thinks Wi-Fi is dangerous. It's microwave radiation, after all, and doesn't want Wi-Fi in the house. Now, I honor that, and if somebody doesn't want Wi-Fi, that's fine. They shouldn't have to have Wi-Fi. They don't have cell phones for the same reason, she says. There are no studies. There are bogus studies people will dredge up, but there are no real scientific studies that show Wi-Fi to be dangerous. The reason, or cell phones, by the way, the reason is it's so low power. And in order to disrupt your cells, to cause physical damage to your body, there's a certain amount of power needs. You need a certain amount of power. Now, radio goes through you all the time. They don't seem to worry about radio and TV going through them. But they're worried for some reason about these higher frequency bandwidths going through them. Now, I know I have been on radio a long time. When you climb up the radio towers, we have a big tower in San Francisco. They call it Sutro Tower. A lot of radio stations and TVs up there. And I went up there once with an engineer friend of mine. We climbed up, and when we got back down, I had white spots on my hand. I said, what are that? What's that? He said, oh, don't worry about that. That's what we call RF burns, radio frequency burns. It damaged the skin. Because you're right there on the tower. That's a lot of energy. And by the way, since then, they've required engineers wear metal mesh suits when they climb up there. This is kind of like going up without a safety belt. I don't think I got cancer. But anyway, I did get those little RF burns. So even radio towers can do that. But this is the key on all of this stuff. The amount of power decreases by the square of the distance. It's called the inverse square law. It drops off really, really fast. And so you can be standing next to Sutro Tower without a mesh bunny suit. It's not going to harm you. It's only if you're on the tower. And microwave, those are 100,000-watt transmitters on that tower. A microwave coming out of your Wi-Fi or your cell phone is not megawatts. It's not even watts. It's tiny fractions of a watt. So it's very small to begin with. You could sit on your Wi-Fi router. You often do sit on your cell phone and there's no harm to come to you because it's so low power. But it's even less dangerous if you're not sitting on it. So as soon as you get more than a few feet away from a Wi-Fi access point, you can't, the amount of power coming to you is so low that you can't, it doesn't damage it. There's no physical damages. No, it's completely safe. Honest. And you'll see bogus studies, just like you'll see bogus studies of vaccines not being safe. But there's no real scientific evidence that there's danger to you from cell phone radiation or Wi-Fi. However, I understand somebody doesn't want to get a vaccine or doesn't want to use Wi-Fi or doesn't want to use a cell phone. That's your prerogative. And the good news is, even though all these companies, AT&T and everybody, when you get their service, everybody wants Wi-Fi, so they give you a Wi-Fi router. But here's the good news. You don't have to use it. You can ask them to turn off the Wi-Fi, or you can do it yourself. You can go in the router, turn off the radios. If you want, if you want to be extra safe, disable by disconnecting the antennas. You just unscrew them, and you're safe then. You don't. It's nothing more to worry about. I honor your fears. I don't want to poo-poo them. I would like to mention that there's no scientific evidence. However, if you're worried about it, that's fine. So you can get this service. You can get the Wi-Fi access points, just disable them. You can do that in software in the Wi-Fi interface. And, you know, it's inconvenient. It means you have to connect via a cable whenever you want to get online, but that's your choice. All right. We're going to take a break. We'll get back to the phone calls. 8888-ASK-LEO. You can yell at me if you want. Say, no, microwaves will kill you. They'll kill you. I tell you. But bad news, because you're everywhere you go now, there's Wi-Fi and radio waves and all sorts of waves going through your body constantly. I'm a fan of science. I go with the science, right? Let's see what the science says. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. More calls right after this. You know, I love Fracture. Fracture is a photo decor company that is out to do one thing, to rescue your images from the virtual shoebox that they're in right now. You know, in the old days, you take lots of pictures. You get them developed. You go down to the one-hour photo, remember that? And you get them developed. Be in a nice envelope, and you stuck the envelope in a shoebox, you put the shoebox in the closet, you never look at them again. Or maybe, you know, once a year you'd go through them and put them in a photo album, make them all look nice, put it in the bookshelf, and you never look at them again. Nowadays, it's even easier to never look at your photos again. You just take them, and they're stored in photos, and they're gone. You know, no, out of sight, out of mind. That's why it's so important to take some of your best photos and print them, right? And hang them on the wall. And this is the best way to do it. With Fracture, they print your photos on glass. Oh, man, they look so good. You don't need to get them framed. You don't need to get a special printer. You just go to fracture.me. I'll show you some. They're all different sizes. So this is the smallest size. This is how it comes, by the way, in a nice box. It's on a backing, cardboard backing to protect it. But the backing has a hanging screw. And then the photos themselves, when we printed this, we put a frame on it. I like to have a frame, but you can go edge to edge. I'll show you one that's edge to edge here. This is edge to edge. That actually, in a way, I don't know, maybe I should do more like that. And then, but notice it's on a special backing, and it's got the hanging hook there. So it makes it very easy. By the way, it can hang either way, portrait or landscape. I show you this one first because it's the smallest size. So it's kind of like a regular print, but it's printed on glass. So you hang it on the wall. You could have a bunch of them going up a stairs or whatever. But they come in all different sizes. So that's the smallest is 4.8 inches by 6.4 inches, but they go all the way up to 21.6 inches by 28.8 inches. I know that's probably hard to imagine. So let me show you. This is a big one. This is the biggest size they do. It's big. It's like it's hanging over the mantle size. But this is a picture that I didn't want to, you know, leave in the photos. This is a picture I took of a seal barking at a flightless cormorant who's looking at him as if, who, me, what? And I took this in the Galapagos. I just love this picture. And I wanted to have it. I wanted to see it more often. So we printed it at Fracture. And now I've got a beautiful glass printed. And there's something about, by the way, printing on glass that just, it looks great. It pops the color. It just looks, it looks 3D almost. It looks so real. Really nice for black and white. I do a lot, at Lisa and I both do a lot of black and white photography. And I've never seen my black and white prints look so good. This is a picture I took of my son at his high school graduation dinner. He's giving me the look like Sinatra. I feel like this is a Rat Pack shot. I just love that. And the color is so rich and vibrant. Fracture.me. Use the offer code TechGuy15. And you'll get 15% off your first order, which is a really nice deal. They're very affordable. They print them in the U.S., you'll be happy to know, with U.S.-sourced materials. It's a carbon-neutral factory. It's just in Gainesville, Florida. They're really great people. And I think they just do a perfect job. They have an online photo editor, too. So they'll take Instagram photos. So they have Square for those. They have Facebook. They'll take Facebook photos, or you can upload your photos. If your photos are shot with a DSLR, they're 3x2. And so on the 4x3 prints, you're either going to put a border, as we do, or you can use their photo editor, expand it out and take out the border and then crop it down. But it'll have to be a little bit cropped because, you know, it's not 3x2. But that gives you a chance to, and Lisa colorized this a little bit. They even have, if you don't have a picture you want to hang on the wall, they have beautiful pictures from around the world, classic paintings and images. take a look. Fracture.me. I just love it. They make everything look great. And of course, not necessarily, but I'm glad to say they come with a 60-day happiness guarantee. So if you don't love your order, no problem. They'll be glad to exchange it or refund your money. You will love Fractures. It looks great. And it gets it out of the digital shoebox and onto your wall where your best pictures, the pictures of the people you love, the places you've been, belong. I just love it. Our house is filled with our pictures now. Thank you, Fracture. Fracture.me. Offer code is TechGuy15 to get 15% off your first order. They do ask, there's a quick one-question survey saying, where did you hear about us? If you would do me a favor and say the Tech Guy, that would make me very happy. I'd appreciate it. It helps support the show. Fracture.me, TechGuy15. TechGuy15, that's because it's 15% off your first order. Fracture.me, offer code TechGuy15 at checkout. And we thank Fracture so much for their support of the Tech Guy show. They made it possible to turn it into a podcast. Happy St. Patrick's Day, Leo Laporte, the Tech Guy, 8888. Ask Leo, the phone number on line 3, Sam in Las Cruces, New Mexico. Hi, Sam.
Hi, Leo.
Welcome. What can I do for you?
I have a question.
Sure.
Basically, I have a question about two phones.
A tale of two phones. Yes.
Yeah, so basically the first phone, I am looking at the ASUS ZenFone 8R, and this phone's going to be for my wife. Why I was looking at that phone was because of Tangle and Daydream.
Yeah, it's terrible. Don't get it. It's awful. Don't get it.
Okay.
We played with it for a while. Tango is Google's imaging capability that they have now stopped supporting. It was kind of like Apple's face recognition stuff, but it pointed outward instead of inward, and it had a 3D mapping camera and all of that stuff. And it turns out nobody wanted to make a phone with the Tango hardware. It's just too darn expensive. It adds too much to the complexity of the phone, the weight, the battery life goes down. ASUS, the AR phone, was about the only one that was made. It's not great, and it has very limited application. And Google's already decided not to support Tango anymore. They've moved on. They're doing something kind of like AR Kit, which is Apple's software-based AR. It's called AR Core. It's fine. So I can't really recommend that. What's the other phone you were looking at?
The Samsung S9. She saw the commercial about the augmented reality emoji.
Yeah, that's a terrible. Now, I like this phone, but the only reason, you have to understand, the only reason Samsung is pushing these AR emojis is because Apple is, right? They don't have, it's creepy. So I have one. I'm looking at an S9 right now, an S9 Plus, and I got the immediately, first thing when I got it, I did the AR emoji on it. If you were watching video, I could show you mine. I could tweet it or something. It doesn't really, there's a thing called the uncanny valley, where when computers try to animate or make humans, there's something creepy as heck about it. This sort of looks like me. I mean, it does definitely based it on me, but it's creepy. Now, she may like it. That's not the reason to buy this or any phone, including, by the way, the iPhone, whose Animojis work pretty well. I don't think that's the real reason you're going to end up using the phone. It's a gimmick. Gets people's attention. On the other hand, I think the S9 is a great phone. Samsung has priced it aggressively. They're trying to beat Apple at their own game. So the smaller version is $720, which for a high-end phone like this is a pretty good deal. And the high-end S9 Plus, the bigger screen, which is the one I got, is $120 more, $840. Now, that's expensive for a phone, but it has all the latest and greatest stuff. It has face recognition that works. It's got, in fact, if you were watching video, I could show you. If I turn on the phone, a little red light flashes. It sees me. It both matches my face and my irises, which makes it more secure than Apple's. And it unlocks the phone. But it also has a fingerprint reader, which Apple has taken off. And I think Apple made a mistake because it's nice to have both. Sometimes a fingerprint reader, like in the dark at night or when you're just not looking at the phone, it's better to have. It also has a very good camera. It's better than the Zenfone. In fact, it's probably the best camera you can get today on a cell phone. Compare that perhaps to the iPhone X, which also has an excellent camera, and the Google Pixel 2 XL. In different areas, each one of them is best. But all told, this is an excellent camera. DisplayMate, which reviews screens, says this is the closest to perfect they've ever seen. And I'll agree, it is easily the best screen I've ever seen on a smartphone. It's very, very fast. It has a new Samsung put in the new Qualcomm 845 chip, which is the fastest chip out there. So all in all, I think this is an excellent phone. You may even find some pretty good discounts with your carrier as long as you, you know, agree to stay with them for a while and that kind of thing. So given the choice you just gave me, there's no question in my mind at all that the S9 is far superior to the Zenfone AR. And she can do the Animoji. The truth is, though, she's going to use the phone for email, for browsing, for messaging, maybe even a few phone calls. And she'll do that a lot more than she'll do the silly AR emoji.
Right. And pictures is important.
It's a very good, oh, man, this camera. And, you know, it does something no other camera phone does. It has a super slow-mo, which is a 960-frame slow-mo, per second slow-mo, that is amazingly good. It's the best slow-mo of any camera. I mean, there's only a few. They say it makes everything look awesome. There's only a few things you use it for, but when you do use it, it really is cool. So yeah, if she's willing to spend that kind of money, and the Zenfone is just as expensive, I'd say absolutely get the latest Samsung S9. I really like this phone. I've had it for, let's see, I got it Wednesday, so I've had it for about 5 days now. Battery life's very good. Everything that you look for in a phone, it has a headphone jack. Hallelujah. Type-C charging, which means, you know, nowadays we're starting to get almost everything Type-C charging, and that's good because you don't have to buy special proprietary chargers anymore. I'm very happy with it. Sound quality is excellent. And sometimes people hate what Samsung does to their phones, the software that Samsung puts on there. I think actually it's quite good. They've done a great job at toning it down, and they're keeping the security patches up to date on there. It comes with the latest Android 8.0 Oreo. Couldn't recommend this phone more highly. It is absolutely my three favorite phones: iPhone X, Pixel 2 XL from Google, and now the latest Samsung Galaxy S9. Really nice phone. Okay. Tell her, right, Leo says, get that S9. And depending on your carrier, if you go there and shop around, many carriers are giving discounts out, that kind of thing. Johnny Jet, traveling man. He's back home. But where did he go last week? He wouldn't tell me, but we'll find out coming up next. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. He's been to every land. He's Johnny Jet. He's our travel guy. He joins us every week on The Tech Guy. Hello, Johnny Jet.
Hello, Leo.
Happy St. Patrick's Day. Did you go to Ireland for the week?
You know, I actually came very close to going to Ireland.
Oh, it'll be fun. Someday I want to go to Ireland for St. Patrick's Day.
Yeah, one of my buddies was hosting a parade today, Gabe Saglia, for Travel Zoo.
Fun.
And I work with them. And hopefully next year.
I feel like St. Patrick's Day is probably not an actual Irish holiday, but a day invented in the U.S. that we're exporting to Ireland.
They have a big parade in Dublin.
They do. Was it always a holiday there, or is it just, you know, they've...
I'm not sure on the history.
Yeah.
Hopefully if I go next year, I will definitely know the history.
I think you should. You and Jack and Natalie should just go and enjoy it.
We were in Ireland a few months ago. And
I love Ireland. Oh, what a great country. I've kissed the Blarney Stone.
Some of the nicest people around.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, Johnny joins us each week not to chit-chat with Leo, although that's part of the fun for me. More for you, though, he has great travel tips, how to use technology and travel better, usually involving an app or a website. What do we have today?
Both.
Did you see, before we get too far, United is at it again?
That was on the top of my list.
They apparently, a flight attendant instructed a woman who had her dog in a dog carrier on the plane to put it in the overhead compartment, which, by the way, United says is not a company policy and is, in fact, illegal. You're not supposed to put any animal carriers or animals, for that matter, in the overhead bins.
Yeah. It's a tragedy.
And the dog died. Now, I know it may
It was a flight from Houston to LaGuardia. And, you know, the woman was traveling with two kids. And I'm sure she was frantic, doesn't know the policies. And the flight attendant's telling you to put the bag up. And it was a mistake.
I swear.
Big mistake. United owned up to it. But don't – I actually set the tip the next day. Don't ever place a live animal in the overhead bin.
No.
I mean, it should be common sense, but – you know, obviously it's not. And
now,
is
it safe to bring it? Is it safe to check? I don't want to say check a live animal. It's not like you put it on the baggage carousel, but they do let you put it. Don't they have animals? In the old days, you couldn't bring an animal in the cabin.
Right. You could put them in the cargo, but, you know, I don't recommend that. You know, that's mean to the animal. But it's better than the overhead bin, obviously, because the bags are moving around up there and there's not a lot of air. I'm not sure how the dog died. I don't know if they know yet. But, you know, if the flight attendant ever tells you something like that you know is wrong, ask for another flight attendant or a supervisor. If they say if they agree with the other person, then ask for the pilot. And then the pilot, you know,
here's the problem. No one will do that. No one's going to do that because, you know, you're going to get thrown off the flight. The problem is airlines.
I'm
not going to do it because the airlines, we know, we've seen it. They are tyrants in the air. They have absolute power. The captain can get you arrested, and it's a federal offense. So you're not going to go say, I got to talk to the captain. You think it's okay? Have you ever done that?
One time I was flying an airline. It was TAP, Portugal, and I took a picture of my food or the seat, and the flight attendants flipped on me.
What?
And they're like, you cannot take photos of the plane. I was like, I'm taking a picture of my seat. And they're like, so anyway, there's actually a policy now with a bunch of different airlines. You can't take photos, especially of people or the flight attendants.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
So you have to read. You have to find out. Every airline is different. But whatever the pilot says, you listen. And
right.
You want to get thrown off. And the pilot usually backs the flight attendants. So
right. That's why I'm not talking. Don't bring the pilot back here because I know I'll be meeting the feds when I get off the plane.
If you're a jerk, you will be. But
if you get thrown off the plane, you get met at the gate by the FBI. It's not a good thing.
I would never put my dog up in the –
Well,
in
that's
the
enough. I might get off the plane for that.
I'd get off unless it was like
I'd
a
say,
life.
No, you know
But
what?
I wouldn't put it up. No, I'd get off. I mean So anyway – I have a website that's actually kind of related. So actually, I'll tweet it out right now because it's a long URL.
Okay.
But it's by the United States Department of Agriculture, USDA. I'll put it in the show notes as well right now so you can see it. So if you're ever traveling internationally, laws are different on every different country. So you need – this website's great because there's a drop-down menu of where you're going. And it will tell you there's a tab for dogs, for cats, and other animals. And it will tell you the requirements. You know, you just can't hop on a plane and take your animal to Australia, as you know, you probably
saw
on the news
last year. They put it in quarantine.
Johnny Depp.
Right, yeah. Johnny Depp, that's right. And he was flying a private jet.
Sneaking the dog in.
Yeah, yeah. So the USDA has rules online.
And they're great. I mean, it tells you for every country. They also have them for people who are coming to America. So if you're outside of America, and I know you have a lot of listeners around the world, they can look and see what our requirements are. And there's actually some for going state to state. And that's only really for, you know, like if you're transporting horses or pigs or livestock. You know, dogs and cats, you don't have to worry about it state to state. Unless you're going to Hawaii. Hawaii, they have certain rules as well. So always check before you get on the plane and find out what the rules are and the laws for each different country.
Agree.
Because sometimes they'll take the animal and they'll put it in quarantine for months.
It's funny because in my ute, which was, you know, 100 years ago, people never traveled with animals. And now everybody seems to. You can't get on a flight these days without a duck, a peacock, a chicken, and a dog.
Well, the service animals are—they're cracking down on the fake service animals.
You still can bring your pets though if they're in a carrier, right?
Yeah, I mean, I had a friend in high school who wrapped a snake around her as a belt, and brought it on the plane.
Don't stop the insanity! Somebody tried to get a peacock on a plane the other day. They actually bought a ticket for it.
Yeah.
All right. What's your app?
I don't want to comment.
I know. You have to stay on good terms with the airlines. I understand.
No, I don't. Actually, I rag on the airlines all the time.
All right.
And that's what I like to do.
Me too.
And that's what I need to do.
And soon we won't be able to go anywhere ever. Well, they're going to put us on a list, Johnny. By the way, I applied for my global entry. I'm waiting to hear.
You don't have global entry.
You finally talked me into it. Because then you get TSA pre.
Lisa has it, whoever you're traveling with. Because
Wait a minute. If I have it, if she doesn't have it, but I do, she can't go with me.
She can't go with you.
No.
She has to go through the regular line. You can go through the expedited one.
Well, that's no good.
And let's say you have a car. You know, if you're driving across to Canada or Mexico, they'll give you Sentry, but with Canada, they'll give you Nexus. So apply for Nexus. The real thing is if you ever go to Canada like you used to, get Nexus. It's $50 instead of $100, and it's good for 5 years, and it allows you to go across the country, go across the border in a car.
These are all services offered by the government's border patrol to expedite it. But you have to go through a screening process to make sure you're a good person.
You do.
But that saves them time and it saves you time.
You have to go. The screening process is usually in Canada, except there is one in Buffalo, I think. But also, everyone in the car when you drive across has to be a member of Nexus.
If I've gone to Buffalo, I might as well just go all the way to Canada. It's not saving me that much.
But if you live like in Erie, Pennsylvania,
okay.
Or Cleveland,
if you live next door to Buffalo, that's convenient. All right. You have an app for us?
I do. So this one's called Service, and I mentioned it before because they have a flight rebooking one, which I don't really love. I like AirHelp better, but for Service, they do one for hotels. So if you register with them and your hotel drops in price, they'll rebook you.
Oh,
and they're. You know, they're supported by Best Western, Hilton, Hyatt, all the big ones.
So you pay them, but you may save more than you pay them.
You do have to pay them. So they either charge an annual fee of $49, and that's if you travel a lot, you should get it. Or if you don't travel a lot, you give them your credit card, and then if they save you money, they take 30% of what they save you.
And they also get you flight compensation.
Nice. Well, the flight, again, I like AirHelp better for the flight compensation because these guys, they screen your email. And this is what this does too. This will also screen your email. It's only right now with Gmail or Hotmail. So if you don't have one of those, like I use Outlook, just create a travel one for Gmail. And that way it's actually better to easier to manage.
That's Johnny Jett, johnnyjett.com. Follow him on the Twitter at Johnny Jett and join him each week right here. Thank you, Johnny. Safe travels.
Thank you.
You never told us where you went.
Oh, yeah. So I was on a 777-200 from Miami to L.A.
Yeah.
So they don't usually fly that. Usually they fly A321s or 737s.
From Miami to L.A.?
Are cramped, yeah. But
I thought it was a seven-hour flight.
It's a five-hour flight, five and a half.
Oh.
So this month, they're ending it, I think, on the 26th or something, because I'm going back to Florida and I'm going to miss it.
Oh, but I love
the 777-200 is the way to go, especially if you have status because they have premium economy and that's better than domestic first class and you can get it free as an elite member, or they have lie flat seats in first class.
Nice.
Which I actually just wrote a post and I'll post it. Actually, I just tweeted it about how I got upgraded, which is not easy these days, even when you have executive platinum status, which I have, which means I fly over 100,000 miles a year on them.
Leo Laporte, the tech guy, 8888, Ask Leo. You too? Oh, me too. Love those Irish bands. Lots of Irish music. I don't know why. And why is my beer green? 8888, Ask Leo. That's the phone number. Fred, Fort Worth. Hello, Fred.
Hello, Leo. Long-time listener, first-time caller.
Thank you. Welcome.
I have a question in regards to Windows 10 and email and files.
Okay.
I'm going to send an email to a friend, and it contains personal information that I do not want anyone else to see but my friend. And I was wondering, what's the easiest way I can encrypt this file? And
first of all,
that way when I send it as an attachment,
right,
when he opens it, he can put in the password, and he would be the only one to know the password.
Yeah, that would be easy to do, and you could zip it, for instance, and zip has passwords. You're right to worry because email is like sending a postcard. Anything that you put in an email, including any attachment to the email, can be read along the way, and it usually goes through multiple servers along the way. So email by itself is not secure. We're seeing that change over time. For instance, if your friend had Gmail and you had Gmail, It would be secure the entire way. It would be encrypted and it would be fairly safe. But for most of the time, when you send email from one host to another, it's not safe. But you've heard me say many times, do not send email attachments. There's so many reasons not to do this. First and foremost, that email attachments often contain viruses and are dangerous. Now, your friend is expecting this from you, I presume, and so he'll know and he'll say, oh yeah, I was expecting this and it's not, you know, it's safe. But often the virus payloads, and this includes ransomware, and this is, by the way, almost always how people get infected and almost always how businesses get ransomware. And this was a big problem, remember, last year, is through an attached file that comes from someone you know, that comes from the boss. And that's because it's really easy to spoof email addresses. And so it's a trivial thing for people to send an email from somebody you know, now this time of year, we're going to see a lot of fake IRS emails. And if you see an email with an attachment, my friends, do not open it. And it's not just you I'm protecting. It's your family. It's your network. It's your business. And ultimately, it's the internet as a whole. Security flaws, problems like this, exploits, viruses, malware affect all of us. And if you get infected, the chances are that virus is going to then take your address book and send it to every one of your friends, and they'll get infected, and so on and so on and so on. Do not send and use and receive and accept email attachments. Stop. Fortunately, many email clients these days will refuse to do it. A lot of them won't accept them. There's a good reason for that. And actually, this goes nicely with your need to have it secure. Instead of sending an attachment via email, put that attachment on one of the free upload services, Microsoft's OneDrive, Google Drive, Dropbox. There's a million of them. All of them offer, you know, a gig or two or more. I think there's 5 gigabytes free at Google Drive. Free. You can encrypt your file if you want to be extra safe. Almost all of these are encrypted anyway in place. But if you don't want anybody who works at the company to see it, because that's, by the way, something that does, it could happen. I don't think it's ever happened. But in theory, somebody who worked at Google could look at Google Drive. Somebody who works at Dropbox can look at Dropbox. Somebody who works at Apple could look at iCloud. So if you're using those services and you really want to be sure it's safe, encrypt it. Zip will work. You can zip it up and use a password. Maybe not the most secure, but certainly enough to kind of prevent casual snoops. If you need something stronger, there are commercial encryption programs that you can encrypt it, then upload it to the service. And then instead of sending a file or an attachment, you send your friend a link. Now, I have also said links are not safe either. I always tell people be very careful about clicking links in email, in messages, text messages that could be very dangerous. This is another very popular way of spreading viruses. But if he's expecting an email from you, it comes and you say, I'm going to attach it to Dropbox. It's going to come this afternoon. Chances are pretty good no hacker knows that information. So that's going to be a safe attachment, especially if you encrypt it and you say, and here's the password. Now you know it's safe. So that's the best way to do that. It'll protect you, your friend, and the internet as a whole from malware. And it'll make sure that it's secure so that nobody can see it along the way. Actually, Google Drive is 15 gigs, but you share it with your Gmail. That's nice. Apple's 5 gigs. That's who it is. Apple's iCloud is 5 gigs. So almost everybody has some access to some cloud storage that you could put an attachment on. Do it that way. And I do like the idea of encrypting it and sending the password along with it in a separate email, because that really means it's safe. Very dangerous to send email attachments. I can give you example after example. Remember the Sony Pictures Entertainment, they got hacked? Via email attachments. Most ransomware, email attachments. There was one case, was it Target? Might have been Target. I think it was. Remember, there was a big breach a year or two ago at Target. All their customer accounts and their credit card numbers and everything escaped. That wasn't through an email. That was because Target had a HVAC contractor, people who did the heating and air conditioning in the Target offices. And as often is the case, they gave those guys access to the network so that I guess so they could bill them. I don't know. There was an exchange of files. And the HVAC contractor got hacked, probably with an email. And then that hack was used to get into Target. Just be smart. I'm glad you're asking the right question, which is, you know, how do I send email attachments securely? But the first step is don't send an attachment. Put it on a service that's safe, and then you can send that. Sarah, Prescott, Arizona. Hi, Sarah. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hey, I think I created an even bigger problem. I thought I had malware.
Uh-oh.
Because I was getting, like, this blue screen. The only way I could get rid of it was to hold the power button down for a long time.
That could be a lot of things, yeah. Okay.
Yeah, and then these aw snap messages.
I blame Microsoft for that. They thought they would be, you know, hip and with it. And instead of saying, your computer has broken, they now say, aw, snap, like the kids. So that, I don't blame you. That looks like a hacker. No, that's actually Microsoft.
All right. Well, that's good to know. But I also had a lot of, my computer really slowed down. And it's
almost certainly you have a bad hard drive. But go on. What did you do?
Oh, I hope you're not right about that. But, well, I downloaded Malware Bytes. They have a free trial.
Yeah.
And I ran it.
Okay.
And it came up with 145 potentially unwanted programs. They're all related to Google user data.
Yeah, just ignore that. Malware Bytes, is not bad, but like most malware software, it's going to come up with stuff that is not really malware,
okay. But
this justifies their existence. So that's all you did? You didn't do anything else? That's good. As long as you didn't get Malware Bytes from anywhere but malwarebytes.org, you're okay.
Right.
That's fine. You're fine. Now, let's figure out what's wrong with your computer. I'm going to put you on hold because we have to take a break for the top of the hour. But hang on because I'll help you off the air. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Oh, yeah, AwSnap is Chrome, not Google, right? Sorry, I'm it's Google, not Microsoft. That's right. Yeah, that's the browser. AwSnap means the browser's crashing. I forgot. It's not Microsoft.
Oh,
but it's still
okay.
The same dumb thing, which instead of giving you a responsible, reliable error message, it has to be hip and with it. AwSnap. Jeez.
All right, well,
so,
that's somewhat of a relief, but what I've noticed since I downloaded the Malware Bytes free trial is my computer has become excruciatingly slow.
Yeah. So malware can do that, but all of those problems sound like, to me, the most common computer problem. How old is your computer?
A couple of months.
Oh, it's brand new. Well,
it's
this happens
new.
Too. It's a flaky hard drive. And I'll tell you why a flaky hard drive can do this. So software will load and not load correctly and crash. Blue screen of death, that means something loaded and wasn't raw. You know, maybe one bit was off. Slow means it's trying to load it. Eventually it does, but it took a while. That makes it slow. So all of these can be tied very much to a failed hard drive or a failing. Actually, not failed or it wouldn't work at all, but a failing hard drive. It's a brand new computer, so good news. You can get it fixed and under warranty and say this is broken.
Yeah, unfortunately, I can't because I contacted Dell, and the only way they'll fix it is if I send it to them in Houston.
Yeah.
And I work online.
You don't want that. Yeah.
Yeah.
So what they would have also done, too, is wiped the drive. If they didn't make you do it, they would have done it themselves. And that would have lost all your data. And put the op because they want to make sure you don't have malware or some other weird program causing the problem. So they restore the drive to the way it was when it came from the factory. And if it's still happening, then they go, yeah, you have a bad hard drive. We'll put a new one in. So that part is an inexpensive part, and you can do it yourself. A laptop or desktop?
Laptop.
Okay. Almost.
Dell Inspiron.
Yeah. So there's a couple of things you can do. If you think you have, if you really do think you have malware, I would copy your data off of it.
Mm-hmm.
So get a USB.
Carbonite.
good. But again, you want a local copy as well, because just in case, you always want three copies of everything. So Carbonite is two, but now you want one more. So get a USB key. You probably don't have a huge amount of data on it.
Probably not.
Yeah, but get a USB drive or a USB key. If it, you know, you can get a 32 gigabyte USB key for $25 or something. It's nothing.
Oh, okay.
And drag everything onto that USB device. Get all your files and everything. And then you're going to want to start over on that computer, which means I don't know if you ever made the Dell recovery disks.
I don't think so.
You probably didn't. And it didn't come with disks. Generally, they don't anymore.
No.
But there is a make recovery disks item. When you first turn on the computer, everybody ignores this, but it says, oh, good, now you can make some recovery disks. And you didn't. So you can still do that. I think without even doing that, the first thing I would do, you have a recovery partition on the computer. That's probably good enough. Most viruses, if you have a virus, don't go into the recovery partition. So the first thing to do is press the Windows key on your machine and type the word recovery. And you will get the Windows recovery
options. Oh, I see it. Recovery drive.
Yep. When you go into recovery, you'll have several options. Create recovery drive. But you don't even – actually, that's not what you want to do. What you want to do – is reinstall the system. So maybe I gave you the wrong restore, maybe is the word. let me type it and see.
Okay.
Yeah, reset. That's it. Reset this PC. They keep changing the
words. I see it. Uh-huh.
All right. If your PC isn't running well, resetting it might help. Now, you have a couple of different ways you can reset it. You can reset it without erasing your data, which is probably, I mean, if it depends how much time you have. If you want to try the least invasive fix first, try that.
Yeah.
If that doesn't fix it, though, you're going to erase the computer, erase it, and start over. As it will be, it'll put it back to the way it came from Dell.
I see. Okay.
So there's two options: keep my files or remove everything.
Okay.
Even if you said keep my files, I would still say make a local backup first, just in case.
Yeah, I think I'll do that.
Yeah. If you're having a failing hard drive, you can get a giant external drive that you plug into the USB port. I would do that, then back everything up to it, and then do that from now on. So you have great to have Carbonite, but you also want to have a local one right here.
Okay. Hadn't thought of that.
Yeah.
Yeah. At one point, one of the Windows updates failed.
Yeah.
And I was, for a few weeks, wasn't completely up to date. And I think that's when I was vulnerable. Something happened.
Yeah. You probably, almost certainly, that's the hard drive is a little flaky. Remove everything and start over. This will, by the way, remove malware as well, if that is something. But it will also refresh those files and see if it fixes everything. It might. If it stays sluggish or you still get blue screens and aw snaps, then probably you have a flaky hard drive. But that's easy to fix. You could just take it to Best Buy or somewhere and have them put a new drive in. I think you can do it yourself. Just watch some videos on YouTube. Look up that Dell Inspiron model. And watch some videos. It's just some screws on the bottom. You take them off and you put in a new drive and you put them back on. And
you make it sound so easy.
It is. And you know what? After you do it, you'll give yourself a geek gold star on your forehead. You'll feel very proud.
All right.
But it's good to know how to do all this stuff. And this, so you can get it, you can get it back. I bet you it's just a bad hard drive, or maybe not even a bad hard drive. Maybe a hard drive that in transit got shaken up a little bit.
Uh-huh.
And some of it got screwed up, and redoing it will fix it. Let's hope it's that.
All right. Fingers crossed. Thank you so much.
All right. Have a great day.
You too.
Take care. Bye-bye. Well, hello. How are you? Leo Laporte here, the tech guy. Time to talk computers, the internet, home theater, failing hard drives, RAM that won't ROM, printers that won't prompt. 8888-ASK-LEO, the phone number if you have a question or a comment or a suggestion. 888-827-5536. Toll free from anywhere in the U.S. or Canada. Love to hear from you. We have a website where I put, I don't do it. We have very fine people like James DeRuvo, who's writing right now. I like saying his name because then he has to write his own name. James DeRuvo writes down what we say, puts it up on the website. Both the caller's question and my answer. Then later in the week, we put up the audio and the video from the show. And so you can really go back in time, literally go to the website, techguylabs.com, and search through all 1,471 shows, find answers to questions. And I encourage you, if you say, well, I have a different idea, or somebody in the chat room said, you know, it's only a 2-month-old computer. If she removes the hard drive herself and replaces it, that's going to void the warranty. Good point. Good point. Dell may have depot service nearby that you don't have to send it all the way to Austin to get it fixed. But in any event, things like that, put them in the comments. I really appreciate that. TechGuyLabs.com. It's free, no charge. We'll keep it online for a long time. I have plans in place. Should anything ever happen to me, the website will go on for 100 years after that. In 100 years, it'll be a relic, won't it? Actually, it might even be more interesting. Be like reading a website about what happens if your buggy wheel falls off. Horses and their care and feeding, that kind of thing. 8888 Ask Leo. Back to the phones we go. Clarence, he's on the line from Chesapeake, VA. Hello, Clarence.
Hey, good afternoon there, Leo. Thank you for taking my call.
Thanks for calling.
I've got a dilemma. You told us to hold on to our copper, but Cox Cable, for about 3 weeks, I didn't know I had a phone service anymore. It was gone away.
They want you to use their phone service. They don't want...
Yeah.
Yeah, they... No. We are really at the mercy of these evil companies. I shouldn't say evil, because evil implies that they're intentionally, devilishly manipulating you. It's not that. They're just they're doing what companies do. They're trying to make more money. But unfortunately, it's become this kind of adversarial situation where these companies are doing anything they can to extract more money out of you. The cable companies don't want you to use the phone company. They like that money to go into their coffers. So they really push these triple play bundles and so forth. And then the phone companies, they don't want you to use the cable company. So they push their products and services. And it's just, we have to just be sophisticated consumers and learn what's really going on. So what's going on with you?
Well, for about 3 weeks, I didn't realize my phone was turned off.
They turned off your phone?
Yeah, it wasn't working, and I wouldn't get any calls from these...
That's illegal. Now, that's evil. That's illegal.
It was evil.
That's evil. I'll give that evil.
I called them, and they said, well, we offered you a free phone to connect to our...
And you didn't take it.
...Wi-Fi line.
You didn't take it, so we just cut the copper.
Yeah.
That is, by the way, illegal. That's highly illegal. And you should probably report them to the State Utilities Commission, because that's really evil behavior. And that's probably not company policy. I would hope not. Probably just an overeager installer. But either way, that's wrong, because that put your life in jeopardy. Your 911 wasn't working.
No, and I understand the 911 now has an issue with Wi-Fi calling.
Yeah, well, it does and it doesn't. I'm sure at some point, without your realizing it, you checked a box or something that said you wanted their phone service. If you didn't, that's really illegal. It's called slamming, where they're cutting off one service to replace it with another. That is illegal, and you can report them to the Public Utilities Commission. Not that anything will happen.
Yeah.
So you can go back and ask the phone company, I want my phone service back. I doubt Cox cut the cable, but they disconnected.
They put a box on the end of the line.
Yeah, they put a box on the end of the line, exactly. Yeah. So what would you like to do? I can tell you what your options are if you tell me what you're in the mood for.
Well, I guess the wife, she says, leave it alone. we got one bill.
So what you're going to want to get is that free phone that they offered you.
Yeah, I got it.
So it's going to connect. And usually when the cable company does that, they do. They put a box in your garage or on the side of your house that the cable goes into. And then that connects to the phone that you also used to have a box that said Ma Bell on it, right? And that was where the phone lines came in from the outside world. They took the phone line from the outside world off and put the line coming out of that cable box into it. So yeah. That means that all the jacks in your house are now wired to the cable company's phone service. 911, by the way, does work as normally.
It is working, but
the only thing that's negative on that is it isn't the old school phone lines, and this goes way, way back, and it's changing in many areas. But it used to be a requirement of the FCC that the phone company, Ma Bell, power the phones from the phone company so that if there was a blackout, you could still use your phone. That's something that the cable companies don't have to and do not do. They probably will put a battery pack in there. The battery backs it up. But you should just be aware of if your internet goes out or the power goes out, often the phone goes out in these situations. But nowadays, everybody's got a cell phone.
They offered me a battery.
Yeah, the battery is there. But here's the problem. They put the battery in. And like all lithium-ion batteries, after a year or so, it just doesn't work anymore. They never come back to replace it. So you think you've got phone service, and then the power goes out and nothing works. And you still have the problem of the internet going out, which it does from time to time. Your phone won't work then either. So it's good. You have a cell phone, though, right?
Yep. Yes. All we all do in the house.
Yeah. So that's one of the reasons this doesn't matter as much as it used to. Everybody's got extra phone capability. So, but, you know, that's... So it's up to you. I understand, and I think your wife's probably right. And they already did it, so you might as well keep doing it. Doesn't save you money. Usually it's the same price as the phone company. I don't know. You know, the offer, sometimes they'll give you a deal for a few months, but then it reverts. There's an advantage. It's all on one bill. You know, I don't think there's anything completely wrong with cable-based phone service, but you should know what the... You should know what's going on with that anyway.
Well, it also made a change on our home security system because tied into the copper.
Right.
And that was no longer, we weren't being serviced. That was out for like 6 months, I guess, before I realized what was going on.
Terrible. That's terrible. That should still work, by the way, because the copper should look to the security just like a regular phone. They don't. Really, from the point of view of everything inside the house, it's just you changed companies. You didn't really change the technology. We know you did outside the house.
Yeah, the system wasn't able to dial to a Wi-Fi phone number.
Interesting.
That's what they told me.
It's not a Wi-Fi phone number, though. It should look like landline from the point of view of that security service. So maybe you got something different. I don't know what Cox gave you. Normally, when you get the triple play thing, it looks to the inside of the house exactly like your old landline service. It's not some magical difference. It is, we know, outside, it's not using the same lines. But inside the house, it should look the same. So maybe they gave you something else. I don't know what this so-called Wi-Fi internet cable phone thing is. I don't know what that is. It would probably be worth investigating, but now that you've got it, I understand your wife's point of view. Once you poke the bear, there's no unpoking it. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. We'll take a little time out here. I'm going to go get a cup of Joe, and we'll continue with your calls and questions. The Gizwiz coming up, too. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Tech Guy Show brought to you today by Rocket Mortgage. I wish I could say my new house brought to you by Rocket Mortgage, but I'm sad to say when we bought our house, Lisa and I, 4 years ago, Rocket Mortgage didn't exist. We went with the big bank, you know, the one with the horses and the whips, a lot of whips. Boy, was that a mistake. First of all, you got to go to the bank. You got to put on a tie, a nice dress, go in there, please, sir, may we borrow some money, fill out a... Forgot like it was I don't know how long it was 20 page application, lots of stuff I didn't know. I had to find out, I'd look up, make phone calls, whatever, fill that out, give it to the banker, then you go home, and then your troubles begin, because then you need to fax them pay stubs, or pay stubs, or bank statements. And I was calling the bank saying, can I get my statements from 10 years ago? Just like it went on and they kept. Now, I don't know if this was just us, but they kept coming back and saying, we need more stuff. What else you got? It ended up taking more than a month to get the loan. We came this close to losing the house. The guy selling it to us, the homeowner, said, he called us up at one point saying, what's going on? Because I'm going to sell it to somebody else who wants it. And we had to talk him off the ledge. So, no. We really want this house. We love this house. The lender's taking their time. Next time, Rocket Mortgage. It's aptly named because it's fast. It also lifts the burden of getting a home loan. Rocket Mortgage comes from the number one lender in the country, Quicken Loans, number one in customer satisfaction, number one in the number of loans. And the reason they're so good and so big is because people love them. And I think some of it has to do with the fact that Dan and his team are very technologically savvy. And that's why they created Rocket Mortgage. And this is so neat. Rocket Mortgage is a mortgage approval process you can do entirely online. I was just going to get my phone and show you. Well, I'll get the other phone. Fortunately, I have more than one. You can do it on your phone. At an open house, you could do it because it takes about 8 minutes. Not weeks, not days, not months. 8 minutes. 8 minutes. And it starts with a loan application. First of all, you don't go to the bank. You do it on your phone or your computer, your tablet. You don't have to look up anything because they just ask you the basic stuff that you already know, name, address, birth date, that kind of thing. And then because they have relationships with all the financial institutions, all you have to do is give permission and then go get the information. You don't have to go to the attic. They'll do that for you in effect. They crunch the numbers and then based on your income and your assets and your credit, they say, here's the loan that's right for you. You choose the term, you choose the rate, you choose the down payment. Everything's completely upfront and transparent, and then you choose the loan. And 8 minutes later, you're showing the realtor, hey, we're approved. We'll take this. That is a good feeling. Getting pre-approval is even better, so do it right now. Go to rocketmortgage.com/techguy, rocketmortgage.com/techguy. Get pre-approved, or if you're at an open house and you say, oh, I love this. I know some of you are going to be looking at open houses today. Bring your phone. And bring this bookmark, this, or you know what? You could actually start the process right now. Just get signed up. Rocketmortgage.com/tech guy. Refis too, by the way. And now might be the best time to refi. At least find out what your rate is and you want to lock that in. Rocketmortgage.com/tech guy. Equal housing lender, licensed in all 50 states, NMLSconsumerAccess.org, number 3030. We thank Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Rocketmortgage.com/tech guy. Thank you, Rocket Mortgage. Should coffee be green? I don't know about that. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, 8888. Ask Leo. That's the phone number. Happy St. Patrick's Day. Midnight Rider is on the line from Palmdale, California. Hello, Midnight Rider.
How you doing, Leo?
I am well. How are you? What do you ride at midnight?
Usually when I'm on the internet, that's why I'm called Midnight Rider, because I used to work nights.
Late nights. Late nights on the internet. You know, it's always daytime somewhere on the internet.
You got that right.
What can I do for you, sir?
Well, I've been trying to watch your show, like, either on my phone or on my iPad, and it'll start up, it'll run for about 30 seconds, and then it freezes. And it's not the speed of my internet or my phone, because if I do the same thing on a laptop or my home PC, it runs just fine. But I'm just wondering what's going on. And I have an Eero system. I got 278 megabits per second down, 24 up. So it's not that.
How are you? So by the way, people are going, well, the problem, Midnight Rider, is it's a radio show. But no, in fact, we do stream video of the radio show, which is very confusing. And where are you trying to watch that stream? Are you doing it from our website, twit.tv, or somewhere else?
Twitlive. It says twit.live. And then I hit the Ustream.
Yeah. So there are other ways you can try it, and I think you should try the different ways. So if you go to our website, which is twit.tv/live, there's a live stream there. Ustream is one of the choices, but there are other providers as well. You could try those, but I think for your mobile device, your best bet is to use the YouTube app. which you probably already have. I don't know many devices that don't come with it, but if you have an iPhone or something that doesn't come with it, just download the free YouTube app and go to our YouTube channel, which is TWIT, stands for This Week in Tech. That's my podcast network, but we make a podcast of the radio show, so we stream that too. So if you go to YouTube and you go to the TWIT channel, there'll be a live stream there. And that okay. YouTube works should work very well on any mobile device.
Yeah, because this is just something that recently started happening.
And I'm not sure it could be an incompatibility with. Remember, streaming video over the internet is kind of a hit or miss proposition, and we use a number of providers for that reason. Twitch.tv is one. That's Amazon's service. YouTube.tv or YouTube.com is another. That's Google's service. And we use a third service that I've used since we started from a company called Ustream that is now owned by, I'm trying to remember, is it SoftBank? A Japanese company owns them now. And that is Ustream.tv. All three of those have apps that you could try on your smartphone. Those might work better. Coming off the web page, it might be that the player isn't recognizing you're on mobile. Might do a better job if you do it from a mobile app directly. And so my first recommendation would probably be YouTube. Goodness knows they have enough experience working on all mobile platforms. So get the YouTube app, go to the TWIT channel or search for TWIT, and you can watch us live because we stream via YouTube Live. Doing live video on mobile is challenging. It used to be we would use Flash, right? But you can't use Flash on mobile anymore. In fact, I don't think we use Flash at all on most of the stuff we do. YouTube was Flash for a long time, but Flash is being finally eliminated in the world. Adobe Flash. But thanks for trying. I appreciate it. Your Midnight Rider, I appreciate your determination, your perseverance. Thank you. Rex in San Diego, Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Rex.
Hey, Leo, how are you today?
I'm great. How are you?
Good. Long-time listener from your tech TV show.
Thank you. Yeah, 20 years ago in coming May, it'll be 20 years from the launch of Tech TV.
Yeah, good deal. Hey, what I called about is I have an older printer. I've got a couple of printers. I got one that I use for the majority of work, but this other one, it's a Hewlett Packard 2210. But when Windows forced 10 on me, it wouldn't recognize the computer, or rather the printer. So I started unplugging it and replugged it, so then I would get recognition back. But here this last time, I just couldn't get it to work, so I took it to a tech guy that I know. And he says whenever it does that now, if you just go in and delete the driver, the existing driver out of the system, then the computer will, when you go back in to do it, it'll hunt for the appropriate driver now. Is that something good, or what do you think?
Well, it's using, this is a little voodoo.
Yeah.
But it works, because what happens with Windows, if it can't find a driver for hardware, it goes out and it looks, and it uses Windows Update. And what it's doing is installing the latest driver that Microsoft has, and that might fix a multitude of problems. There may be an underlying problem too. Remember, there's printers are just notoriously tough to keep working.
Yeah.
If you ever talk to a guy working or a gal working in an IT department, just say, does anybody ever ask you? Does everybody call up and say the printer doesn't work? And they'll shudder. They'll shudder in horror.
Yes. Yeah.
Because it's notorious. Most likely, sometimes the spooler, there's this thing called a spooler on Windows.
Uh-huh.
When you print, you notice it doesn't print right away. It prints it to the spooler, which then connects the printer, and the printer sends a page at a time, or actually even less because printers these days don't have much memory. It sends a small chunk at a time to the printer, spools it out. And sometimes the spoolers get confused, deleting the printer clear out the spooler and start over. So that might be why it works. There might be the driver's out of date. But does it work for you every time?
Before when I was unplugging it, and now you put in a new driver, And I bet you the spoolers, not for copying, but for scanning.
Yeah, I bet this. Oh, well, that's another matter. Hang on for a second. I'll talk about that. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. So the scanner doesn't use the spooler. So the spooler's one of the number one problems with printers, and there is actually a command to restart the spooler, which sometimes works. But if you're saying it's the scanner,
well, the printer has a scanner in it. It prints, and I use old thumb drives from an old camera. I just plug them in, and it copies those.
Yeah,
so that's really the only reason I kind of keep
right.
it around.
So that's not
my other one for the high speed printing and stuff like
Got
that.
It. So it doesn't use a spooler for scanning.
No,
it uses a scanner driver, and I do the same thing. I have an all-in-one printer. I use my Epson all-in-one for scanning. I love it. I love having a scanner on the network.
Yeah.
That's really handy.
It is. I don't use it that much either.
Yeah. So in that case, what you're doing is reinstalling this, not just the printer driver, but the scanner driver, which is in fact a separate driver, believe it or not.
Oh, okay.
But deleting the printer driver will then tell Microsoft Windows to go out, get a new driver, and in that process it gets a new scanner driver as well.
Yeah.
Do you have a tab on your driver that says print or scan or that? How do you switch between the two functions?
Well, before I used to have an icon, a shortcut on my desktop, and I lost that. So when I got it back this time, so I went in and I went into, I have to look at it. I go into, all programs, and I go to device and printers, and then I switch from my one printer to this one if I want to scan or I want to do a small printer project, and then I make that the default printer, and then I right-click, and it brings up a little menu, and scan is on there, so I hit the scan button on the printer, and then when I hit scan on the screen, on the drop-down menu, then it does the scan.
So... No, if there's is there a Windows version of ViewScan? So there's a third party scanner driver that I really like that I use that replaces the old HP scan driver.
Uh huh.
But it may only be on Macs. I'm trying to see if
you know it's printed before I could scan like four or five documents. Then it would put it into one folder. Now. With whatever the computer is giving me, it's scanning it by one page, and I tried to put
Let me recommend this. You can try it for free from Hamrick, HAMRICK.com. It's called ViewScan. It's a replacement for the company-made scanner driver that's, in my opinion, much better.
Okay.
They also keep it up to date better.
So spell that again. Is it H-A-M-R-I-K?
R-I-C-K. Okay. Hamrick.com.
Okay.
And
I'll try that.
It often is a better choice. And I bet you if you put ViewScan on there, this will just all go away. It has better settings. You can say, yeah, always scan to this folder, stuff like that.
Uh-huh.
So I would try that.
Sounds good.
Yeah. It's from Hamrick. And does he charge for it? He probably does, but I'm sure you could try it for free. It is an amazing thing. And it's based on the fact that scanner drivers are, there's a standard for that called Twain. And it uses, and since you have an older scanner, it'll actually work better, I think, with ViewScan. So try that.
Sounds good.
Okay.
Very good. Thank you very much.
Thanks for the call. Take care.
Have a good day. Happy St. Patty's.
Happy St. Patty's.
Right-o.
Sounds like you started on the green beer already.
No.
Take care.
It's a high-speed wobble on my tongue.
Take care.
All righty.
Obviously an engineer. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Love that little sound. You hear it in a lot of hip-hop songs, right? Right, Michael? I feel like that's kind of a hip-hop sound. I wonder where that comes from, though. You know, I don't think it's a synthesizer. I feel like this is a common place in my generation when you didn't have a lot of synthesizers to make new sounds. You'd think of interesting ways to make sounds. Keith Richards talks about the Rolling Stones classic, I Can't Get No Satisfaction, with that great... famous guitar riff. And the way Keith made that is he recorded it and then played it back through a kind of a junky tape recorder and speaker into a microphone and did it again and again and again, degrading the sound, but also giving it a unique feel. It's an analog sound that he made and changed and created a sound that's a classic in rock and roll. I have a feeling that that something like that. Maybe that's that high-speed tongue wobble our last caller was talking about. I don't know. 8888, ask Leo, the phone number. It turned out I hung on with the caller a little bit during the break, and it turned out the real issue for him was scanning, not printing. Print spoolers are a real problem with printing, but they don't have anything to do with scanning. So I recommended, and I do still recommend this, a third-party scanning program that has its own driver built in called ViewScan. And it's still around. It's still Mac and Windows. And it's still, I think, the best way to do scanning. It probably wouldn't be affected in any way by a Windows upgrade. It's from Hamrick, Hamrick.com. I'll put a link in the show notes at techguylabs.com if you want to try that out, if you're having scanning issues. Cynthia's on the line. She's next from Hammett, California. Hello, Cynthia.
Hi.
Welcome.
I have a question. Okay, I have an Apple i6 that when you get your voicemail, you can actually read what the
person... Oh, visual voicemail. Steve Jobs was so proud of that. He had a strong arm AT&T into that. Yeah.
Okay. I have a friend who has a Samsung.
Yeah, doesn't do it. That was an iPhone exclusive for many years.
Okay. My question is, she's deafer than a doorbell, and...
It's a nice feature, isn't it, to be able to read your messages? Yeah.
Yeah.
So here's the answer to this question. It is very... There's two ways to get it. One is some carriers do offer this. So T-Mobile does, AT&T does. I don't know who her cell phone carrier is, but she could inquire with the cell phone carrier. Now that you know what it's called, she can just ask them, do you have visual voicemail? And sometimes it's an extra charge.
Okay. That's what we were trying to figure out.
And then the other way you can do it, and this is how I do it, and this may be a little too geeky for her, but Google offers a free service called Google Voice. And one of the features of the Google Voice service is it does exactly that. It transcribes voicemails. The negative about Google Voice, it's free. It's from Google. It's free. The negative is you probably should want to use a Google Voice number as opposed to her number. She can transfer a number to Google Voice, but I don't think she wants to do that. She'll get a new number. And you can give her a clever number if you want. That number, I use Google Voice for me is a lifesaver because, as you probably imagine, I'm always trying different phones. I have accounts with all the carriers, and I have 7 or 8 different phone numbers. But I don't want to give out a different number every month. So I got a Google Voice number. That number never changes. I give that out, and then in the Google Voice settings, you could say, when somebody calls that number, ring these up to 5 different phones. Ring these phones. So I just change the number. When I get a new phone, I just change the number in Google Voice. Nobody even knows I've changed my number. The phone still rings through to it. And messages show up in my email and in Google Hangouts, which is a messaging program they offer. It says, you got a voicemail. Here's the text. Here's what we think it said. And here's a link to the sound from it.
Yeah.
And that's a free service. So she could use that. She could say, from now on, use that phone number, have it forwarded to a regular cell phone, and then she'd get text messages for free. That's the free way to do it. A little more complicated.
Right. Because I have problems with, I have to spell check.
Oh, yeah. They're not perfect because computers don't understand humans very well.
Right.
So they do the best. But I'll tell you what, they do a good enough job you can look at it and figure out, oh, that was the car repair company. My car is done. Even though it says, this is Joe from Vigelompomp and your bar is one. You could still kind of understand what the intent was.
Right. Okay. So that's basically, she looked at me like I was on drugs and I'm not sharing.
No, it's the best thing ever. a visual voicemail was huge. That was a big, plus you didn't have to call a voicemail number, right? It just was on the phone.
Right.
Apple made a, Apple, you know, strong-armed AT&T into doing that. Steve Jobs basically said, look, if you want the iPhone, you're going to give us visual voicemail. It was a huge thing. Now everybody copied it since.
Right. So, all right, that's basically all I need.
Well, I'm glad you called. Thank you.
Okay, thank you, thank you.
She could port her number, of course, to Google Voice, but then you then in a way you lose that because now Google Voice has the number and, you know, it's kind of a pain. I would keep your number and just get a new Google Voice number. I got a vanity number. So it spells out something so it's easy to remember. If I give it out to people, they remember the words. Kind of like 8888 Ask Leo. You know, they give them the words. And that's kind of a good way to do it, too. I like Google Voice a lot. I use it all the time. I hope Google doesn't do anything to it. You just never know with Google. They have a bad tendency to kill great services that everybody uses. Kimberly, Carlsbad, California. Hi, Kimberly. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hi, Leo. Okay, I have a Mac computer, and we have AT&T UVerse.
Okay.
And we were having a lot of problems with Wi-Fi.
I love that sigh. Right? How many times have I heard that sigh?
I know, right? Well, this is actually an unusual incident or situation once we figured out that we went ahead and did all of our cable, took it off Wi-Fi, and just had everything hardwired. So since then, though, I was having problems when I would go on to my Yahoo account, and it would kick me out of a secured site. And it got to the point where I was like, wow, and it was so slow. And I was like, okay, I need to call my IT guy. So I called my IT guy. He was trying to figure it out. He thinks he kind of figured it out, and what he was explaining was that there's the IPv address that is given to you is either it was like they were giving them all out in IPv4 and then your number. Well, now they're switching over to IPv6, and so there's a connection problem Mac.
Okay, now you're going to hear a big sigh out of me.
Okay.
That's not what's going on at all.
Okay.
your IT guy knows way too much.
I don't know. I just was like...
Yeah, no, this shouldn't be a problem for anybody. IPv6 is invisible, and most people aren't using it anyway. So...
Right.
That's not what's happening. However, I don't know what is happening. Tell me again. You decided you didn't want to use Wi-Fi anymore. You went wired.
Well, okay, we went wired, but my Mac is still on Wi-Fi. That didn't change. But what happened when they came out to the house? They did change the box. They changed the whole system changed and.
Unfortunately, I have to take a break. Just hang on the line.
Yeah.
And I think it'd be better to handle this off the air. Anyway, okay. Because it's very specific to your problem, but I think I know what's going on. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Dick DiBartolo, the Gizwiz, coming up. So you got UVerse, and right. You're using wired with everything but the Mac, which is wireless still.
Wired.
Is this problem only happening on the Mac, or is it happening everywhere?
Well, I'm seeing it now on my kids. Computers, their laptops now too.
All the every computer, it's happening on Wi-Fi as well as wired.
Yes.
Yeah. And what's
they don't notice it like I do because they don't. They just
they don't know any better. They think the internet never works anyway. So
right.
Yeah. So so tell me again the symptom. You'll go on to Yahoo.
Okay, so like I'll go into Yahoo, and then all of a sudden, it'll be secured, and then it'll stall, and then, like, it will be in an unsecured...
Oh, that's not good.
Right, yeah.
That's not good. And this started when you got UVerse.
You know, it really did. After they came in and... I'd already always had UVerse, but we just got fed up, and I was like, you guys need to get in here, and we need to just change out whatever the problem is.
Does it happen on any other sites that you go to, or just Yahoo?
You know, off and on, I'm noticing when I'm in Google Chrome is where I see it the most. And then in Safari, sometimes, but not a lot, not as much as I do in Chrome.
And so you'll get an announcement. Yeah, Chrome is actually very finicky about this. So it may still be happening in Safari, but it just might not be warning you. Chrome is saying, this is no longer a secure site. It'll give you a warning.
No, it doesn't even. The only way I know is, you know, in the address bar, it shows it'll flip over to the insecure.
That may just be you're going from one page to another.
Well,
so you're not getting an error or anything. You just notice this happening.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah.
But you aren't. But it's not saying, uh-oh.
No. It's not giving me a warning or anything.
Yeah, I think you're okay.
Okay. I'm just
not all sites are secure.
Apple,
yeah, not all sites are secure. The only sites that have to be secure are sites where you're giving them private information.
Well, when I would log in to my account.
Well, even then, it's hard to tell because the login form can be secure while the page is not.
Okay.
So I wouldn't worry too much about that. This is going to go away, by the way, in the next few months.
I kind of think, you know, when this started happening, I was like, you know, maybe there's an upgrade I need to upgrade to. And I noticed that the OS did have an upgrade.
Well, you definitely want to use the latest versions of the operating system and the browsers at all times.
Which I did. Good. Right. I went ahead and I did all that. It took forever. But then it got better, but it's still doing it a little bit, but it is better. And so
I think this is just normal, especially on Yahoo, which is not the greatest
provider
in the world.
It's not so bad to just get rid of it. So yeah,
I think it's just going to an insecure site. Not all sites are secured, although, as I said, this will change because Google has decided to warn people if sites aren't secure, which means all sites will suddenly go secure by May.
Right.
And then you won't even see this ever again. The only time, I wouldn't worry about it. I think you're okay.
Okay. All right. I'm going to keep watching. I mean, eventually I'll have to do something about it, but I thought maybe you might be able to know. I mean, there is.
Well, there's one thing you can do. AT&T uses Yahoo. And it may be that because you have AT&T service, there's a confusion in the cookies. So clear all your Yahoo cookies out.
Okay. Okay, I'll try that.
That may actually solve this.
I'm going to do that. Okay, thank you.
Okay, thanks.
All right.
Take care.
Have a good one.
You too.
Bye.
That made her happy. Stand on your head. Wave a chicken. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Upside down, you're turning me. It is Dick DiBartolo, the Disco King, and our Gizwiz, our Gizmo Wizard. Dick is, you may remember the name if you led a misspent youth and you spent your hard-earned quarters on Mad Magazine, as I did every month, you'll know the name Dick DiBartolo, Mad's maddest writer. He just happened to spend all his ill-gotten gains from Mad Magazine on gizmos and gadgets and became the Gizwiz.
Leo, how are you?
Hey, Dickie D, how are you?
Good. You know, I listen to you every week. I hang on you every word. But, Leah, what was the post office box to buy those cookies you were talking about?
They're fresh-baked cookies.
Oh, that's it. That's
nothing
the
but the
want.
Finest that's cookies. The... I know. It always makes me hungry. It was a bad idea to call those cookies. But yeah, you know what you know what the alternative was? What cookies are is persistent client-side state information.
No, I'll take cookies.
Yeah. Although... they kind of missed a bet because PCSSI could be Pixies.
Oh, that's cute.
I like Pixies better than cookies.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, wait a minute. This works right into this. How do you feel about waffles?
Love the waffles. You got waffles for me?
I have waffles, Leo. So this past Tuesday, a big show in Chicago, the International Houseware Show, took place.
Oh, boy.
I didn't go, but they brought products to New York.
They brought you waffles.
They brought me a unique waffle maker. Oh. It's called the Caloric Easy Pour Waffle Maker. Now, I thought it was on display because it was standing at a 45-degree angle. It turns out the waffle maker does not open. you actually pour the batter into a chute at the top of the waffle maker.
I kind of like this idea because I always put too much batter in, and then I close the waffle maker, and it goes out the edges.
Exactly. Yeah. So there's a tight gasket around it, and then you pour the batter in.
If you eat enough waffles, there'll be a tight gasket around you.
Exactly. It comes with a cup. And you fill it to the top with batter. I believe it's like 6 1/4 ounces. You pour it in the chute. And at first when I did it, I thought, is this going out the bottom? It just seems to be. And then the batter disappeared. I waited a few minutes and I opened it to check for doneness. And I have a perfect waffle.
You don't have to flip it or anything?
You don't have to do anything. So it's a 7-inch in diameter waffle. It's almost was an inch high, maybe 7/8 of an inch high. And the top of the waffle iron has a little browning from 1 to 5 and a little indicator light to tell you when you should start putting the batter in.
I might get this. I really love waffles.
This will really, and I just gave it a shot of Pam before I started it, but it's a nonstick coating already. And if you put in too much batter, the batter stays in the chute and it gets baked too because the heat runs all the way up to the chute. So are you
telling me that the people from the cookware show came to your house and made waffles?
No. They had a preview with about 20 people.
Oh.
And then I said to the woman,
can I take this home?
Exactly. She said, well, they're not on the market. She said, if you wait like 2 weeks, we can send you one. I said, because I want to see this for myself.
Yes.
And so they sent me one and we set it up. And,
so it's a fairly big appliance. I mean, it's going to take up some counter space, but not.
Oh, yeah.
Does it make Belgian style waffles?
Well, you know, I think they certainly look like Belgian style waffles, and you just pour the batter directly in the top.
You
wait a few minutes, and the red light just tells you the waffle iron's on. The green light cycles on and off to tell you that it's keeping the temperature.
Yeah.
And then about 5 minutes in, you give it a shot, and you just open it up. And the first time I opened it up, I said, you know, I want to make this just a touch darker.
Oh, those are like Belgian waffles. They're round.
Exactly. They're round and they're thick.
Ooh, yeah. Crispy. Yeah. Do they come out crispy?
They are crispy. I only had 32 ounces.
Tell me about the maple syrup, Dick. Tell me about it. Did you put maple syrup on it, Dick?
I did.
Oh,
and when I picked it up, I said, oh, there's only 32 ounces in here. I hope this is enough.
Did you put butter on it, Dick? Did you put butter on the waffles? That sounds so good, Dick.
Yes, I did.
Well, tell me more about the waffles, Dick. Wow, those look real. I'm looking at the video on your website. That looks really good.
Yeah, it's a very clever idea. So it's not on Amazon yet.
How much, though? It's going to be thousands of dollars, right?
No. The woman said the suggested retail is $49.95.
Oh.
She said it's probably going to sell for $10 less.
But you only get one waffle, so that's
one waffle at a time.
So if you've got a family of four, they're going to be waiting an hour.
I figured it was about 6 minutes.
I got one of those wafflers that has a handle.
You flip it over. That make several waffles at one time?
Well, that's the problem. It also only makes one at a time.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah,
but
there's a bigger waffle iron where you'll make more than one at a time.
Oh, I was trying to do that with my old CD changer. That was a big mistake.
What you do is you take some hiking shoes and some pancakes, and you just put the waffles on the pancakes.
There you go.
See, pancakes you can make a bunch at a time. I guess that's what makes the waffles so special, is it's one at a time.
You know what? A quarter waffle each while the next one does, and then a quarter waffle each to the next one. There you go.
See, we do waffles when the kid has a sleepover. And so there's like five hungry teenage boys waiting for their waffles. And I'm going to say, okay, here's the first one. Who wants that?
Just a 1/16 of a waffle each.
Yeah, it doesn't work out all that well. Thank you, Dickie D. Go to gizwiz.biz to find out about the caloric. It's caloric with a K. K-A-L-O-R-I-K. And their new waffle maker will be out soon. Not out yet, very soon. But you can see it in action at gizwiz.biz. While you're there, play Dick's What the Heck Is It contest for a chance to win an autographed copy of Mad Magazine. And there's also gizwiz.tv. I don't know what's there, but it exists. No, that's where his podcast is. Thank you, Dickie D.
Thank you, sir. Talk to you next week.
Thank you for a misspent youth, too.
Okay, you're welcome.
And I'm going to come over, and tomorrow we're going to make waffles. Got only a minute left. Maybe we can help Scott in Los Angeles. Hi, Scott.
Hi. I have a problem with old Microsoft Word files and some other types, but the main problem is Microsoft Word.
How old are they? You can't, your current Word can't read them, huh?
Yeah, they're very old. They're all from the 90s.
Wow.
And for a long time now, they've been reflecting the icons have turned from Microsoft Word to this little black box that says EXEC in the upper left corner. And Microsoft Word doesn't recognize them. And I can extract the original writings with text edit. But text edit also puts in a lot of, there's all this code around it.
Yeah, that's because Word's putting formatting there. So my friend David Pogue wrote a Scientific American article, believe it or not, on this. One of the issues with older files is there's a check trust option that you can take off in the file menu under options, trust center. And that's to protect you. But some older files, if you have that on, you can't open them. So that's the first step, is to turn that off for those older files. Hang on, I'll tell you another thing you can do right after this. Well, that's it for the Tech Guy Show for today. Thank you so much for being here. And don't forget, TWIT, T-W-I-T. It stands for This Week in Tech, and you'll find it at twit.tv, including the podcasts for this show. We talk about Windows on Windows Weekly, Macintosh on Mac Break Weekly, iPads, iPhones, Apple Watches on iOS Today, Security on Security Now. I mean, I can go on and on and on. And, of course, the big show every Sunday afternoon, This Week in Tech. You'll find it all at twit.tv. And I'll be back next week with another great Tech Guys show. Thanks for joining me. We'll see you next time. Do you see a recovery option when you try to open those files, or just does it? What does it say? Just no.
No, I don't see anything. I'm using a Mac, and so when I right click and you choose Open With, the default says Adobe Illustrator.
Right. That's a different problem. So that's because it doesn't recognize the file extension. You have to open Word first.
Right.
You won't be able to double click those because those files are not associated with the current version of Word.
Yeah.
Issue. If you open Word first and then use the file menu to navigate to those old files, what happens then?
They're all, the ones that have that icon are all grayed out.
It won't let you open them. So try turning off the Trust Center first.
Okay. Okay. Should I try that now?
Just see. We got time.
Okay. Where again do I go for that?
So I'm pretty sure it's the same on Mac. You click Open, I think Options, and then Trust Center. And if it's not on the Mac, which it may not be, that may be a Windows-only feature. This is David Pogue's fix. No, he's using a Mac. See. Turn off the Trust Center. That's to protect you from opening unknown files. But see if that helps.
Okay, Open. Oh, well, now under Open it says repair or recover.
Now we're getting
that before.
Now we're cooking with gas. So now you can use the recover.
Okay, let me go to try to find these again.
You can also find those entries in the convert file window.
Yeah,
under open. Okay. And that should allow you to open almost any version of Word. If it's really, really old, there are third-party, I think, Word interpreters.
Yeah.
This may not get you. Go ahead.
Yeah. This file needs to be opened by the recover text from any file text converter, which may pose a security risk if the file you are opening is a malicious file.
Yeah, blah, 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 blah.
Okay. Okay, well,
it's trying to protect you.
Oh, it opened.
Yeah. It's trying to protect you.
Yeah. Well,
but in this case, you now again, you normally want to leave that on.
Yeah.
So once you've got these all open, save them out in the modern format and then turn the Trust Center back on.
Oh, fantastic. Oh, wow. Well, that's surprisingly easy.
I'm only sorry that didn't get on the radio show so people could see what a genius I am.
Well, it sure worked.
Good. I'm glad it worked. Thanks for the call. I appreciate it.
Thank you very much.
My pleasure. Take
care. Bye.
Convert them to RTF. That actually is really good advice. If you convert it to RTF, you'll never have this problem again because that format will live forever.